Blog Talk Radio.
We had Charlie, Trippy, and Gino Marquette. If you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet. Which I could quarterback, like Donnie Lou Jack, or even Sid Luckman, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the Galloping Ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. You had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Why ain't Tittle, Ally Madison? Hey, I remember all those guys from back in the day.
It's the sort of thing, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows, weekend warriors toe to toe. Football, 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 football.
Yes, sir. Here we are. Again, Wednesday night with a hot new episode of CMT Firestorm, where we bring you the best and brightest in the world of football and mostly everything else. I'm your boy, Cali Mike, with me today. We got my boy, Chi-Town Mike. Chi-Town, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Cali Mike? Everybody? It's going to be an interesting show tonight.
Ready to get things cracking, Jack, and ready to get it on cracking. We're also back a mile to the south. What's going on, Quavo?
Quavo?
Oh, my bad. Maybe I'm reading a number here on it. Is that Tony Watley?
Tony Watley in the house.
Oh, my goodness. The original Tennessee Volunteer. Okay, you kind of have me killed back. We'll get your numbers mixed up. What's going on, man?
What's going on? Up tonight.
All right.
Going fine.
We are ready to get things on and cracking here. We have a lot to talk about. Things we're going to be talking about today. Beginning of the football season, of course. Week 2 college football. We are going to get heavily into the Ray Rice situation. That will be at the end of the hour or at the end of the show. We're going to probably take a long time to talk about that because I want to break down each and every aspect of this. We're getting so much new information in. And then that's probably going to take us on into overtime. So let's get things started with week 2 of college football. There were a couple of big games. Of course, my USC Trojans were on display against the Stanford Cardinals. And they played in Palo Alto. Stanford had a 17-game home winning streak, the longest in the country, going into that game. And the Trojans came away with the win. It was an ugly win, but it was a W that I'll take. Tony Watley, what game stood out to you in week 2 of college football?
Well, I'm glad you said it was an ugly win to begin with because it was show enough ugly. But for me, are you talking about the one that impressed me the most or the one that made me think, the most.
What game? Well, I know you're watching your Gators, but besides that, which game did you make sure you had to watch?
Oh, I had to watch that Oregon game. That Oregon game was the game of the week for me. And it was definitely a show because in the first half, Oregon looked lethargic. They just didn't seem like they were going to do it to Michigan State. Michigan State was actually playing like they were going to win the game. And then Oregon came in the second half and put it on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And to add on to that, it's funny, me and my roommate, we were watching that game, and, you know, I told him, I was like, you know, the thing about Oregon is they might score 30 points straight, and you might not, you know. And sure enough, they went out and scored 28 straight points, you know, and
that's the one thing I say about Oregon that reminds me of an SEC team. And that's what I keep telling everybody that separates SEC teams from all of the teams in the country. And it's that fourth quarter. It's conditioning and it's being still able to do what you did in the first quarter in the fourth quarter. And a lot of teams are not able to do that. And the SEC is the best conference at fourth quarter teams. And Oregon is one of those fourth quarter teams. The conditioning those coaches put those guys through must be amazing because they'll come out in the fourth quarter and run like it's the first quarter. And those teams that are not conditioned with them, they can't keep up.
I don't know if that's an SEC tribute as opposed to a good coaching tribute. Mike, what game stood out to you week two in college football?
I got to say, Wally's nemesis, the Pac-12, baby. I was looking at that at USC and Stanford game, and that was a game, man. It was kind of, you know, me, you agree with me, you know what I'm saying, with some BS they wasn't letting them play and some calls I didn't like, you know, when the one play when your star, your leader, your defense got thrown out for that hit, going out of bounds. I thought, man, it's football. What the hell you expect him to do? He going full speed. He can't just stop. You know, he got thrown out for that play. Like, that's some BS, you know. But, I mean, it was a good game, man. Like I was saying, you know, I have wrote on our CMC Firestorm page, I think USC is back. They go ahead and be right back with Steve Sarkisian, man. I mean, you know.
I think they're on the right track. But, you know, like I said, they still, you know, they still only got 50 guys on the, you know, they still only got a team with that's putting out 50 players. So, you know, injuries happen in the season. You know, I mean, you know, two injuries and they're going to be down to one guy playing, you know, one deep, you know, on his depth chart. So, you know, I want to say they're back too. Like, they have the talent to be back, but, you know, to really make a championship run, you got to have that depth, you know, and be able to, you know, stand through injuries because, you know, shit happens, man. I mean, you know,
exactly.
Seeing UT, their starting quarterback just went down, and you know now they got a redshirt freshman starting for them. So, you know, it'll be interesting to follow them through the season. Did anybody? I know it was on TV. Looks like Texas A&M, they put up 73 points. It was on Lamar, but you know, that's a lot of points. Now they have two first place votes in the. In the AP coming into this week. Even though we've only seen two games of them, what are your thoughts on A&M? Are they on A&M, Tony? Are they contenders or they pretenders?
Right now, I can't say because no matter how good of an actual team they are, they're in the Western Conference of the SEC. Which means they have to play Alabama, Auburn, and LSU. So no, you can be a great team, but when you have to play Alabama, Auburn, and LSU, it can make you have three losses on the year, and you could have been the fourth best team in the country. So I'm not going to go and say that they're a top caliber team right now. I'm going to say that Texas A&M is a team that I think could probably compete with any team from any other conference in America. But because they are in the SEC West, they may not be seen as a team that is truly as good as AB. And that's how I'm going to leave it, because when you got to play Alabama, LSU, and Auburn, that, I mean, odds are you're going to lose two of those three.
What about you, Mike? What do you think about that?
Well, Tony being my nickname, by the way. Tony, I mean, like I was telling the guys, I keep saying it, man, Kevin Sumlin, man, them Texas boys, like, you know, hey, I think they can be right in it. And I think when they play Alabama, I think it's going to be close again. And, hey, they might beat Alabama. I mean, remember how they was down last year and they made that run? I mean, hey, it was close. They could, you know, hey, I think Texas A&M, to me, is a team you got to watch out for, man. I don't know if they're going to get to being that championship, but I think that's a team, one of the teams that's good in the SEC, and that's going to be real good, constantly consistent. They got that coach, man, Kevin Sumlin, man.
The coach don't play on Saturday.
Look, they come on the road, having your first time. I mean, the quarterback Hill, right? He's a true freshman, right?
Redshirt.
Hill, true freshman, right? Redshirt freshman to come on the road, put up that many points on South Carolina, a team that's ranked. I mean, that says a lot right there.
But the coach don't play on Saturdays.
Hey, he got some boys, man. It's Texas. He got some players, man. Hey, like I said, he showed when he came on the scene 2 years ago what he did with A&M. Yeah, I'm not doubting the man. Third year, hey, Texas A&M
goes to Florida. I mean, Texas A&M goes to Alabama.
Texas A&M
play
Florida this year?
No, Texas A&M goes to Alabama.
I wish A&M did play the Florida this year, the Gators, because I think Texas A&M will smoke Florida.
Again, Texas A&M goes to Alabama. Texas A&M goes to Auburn, and Texas A&M plays LSU in the last game of the season. Do you know, by the time LSU gets to the last game of the season, they are in championship form. And I'm going to tell you, it is a very good chance Texas A&M loses all three of them SEC West games this year, because they're going to Alabama, they're going to Auburn, and they play LSU in the very last game of the year, and LSU is going to be ready for the playoffs in that last game of the year.
I think Texas A&M is going to be ready.
I'm not too big on their passing game.
Also, LSU had a battle with Wisconsin. Wisconsin had LSU in that first game. You know, hey.
Everybody was talking about Wisconsin winning the Big 12 or winning the Big 10.
Hey, I guess that's Ohio State with Bryce Miller being out. But
LSU has the defense in place, but their offense has a long way to go. That quarterback.
Hey, but they got 12 games to get there.
Yeah, they do, but it's hard to learn on the road when you're playing Auburn and Florida and Ole Miss.
We're talking about them playing Texas A&M. Even if they lose two or three games on that 12-game skid or road, that trip, I'm telling you, come game 14, when they are playing the last game of the year, them boys will have gelled together. Those freshmen will not feel like freshmen. Those seniors will want to win that last game, and they will want to get in the playoffs, or they will want to get that high bowl game. And I'm telling you, Texas A&M playing LSU in the last game of the year is not a good thing for Texas A&M.
Hey, it's good excitement and good competition, and someone, them boys are going to be ready regardless where it's fake. They ain't going to just lay on the ground. It's going to be a battle. And I'm intrigued to see Texas A&M playing that game, but also Auburn. That's going to be a dandy right there. That can go either way. That game might go into overtime.
Speaking of Texas, I want to switch subject here. Speaking of Texas, Charlie Strong at University of Texas, he's gotten rid of he dismissed 9 players so far. It seems like he's trying to reinvigorate that program. Seems like they're pretty lethargic, and it's going to take some time. Tony, I believe, was that you who asked me how long do I think he's going to get fired or not?
No, that wasn't me.
Okay, that wasn't you. But anyway, I mean, I want to know, what do you guys think? I mean, we all know how hard it is to rebuild a program.
Especially in Texas.
Exactly. Do you guys think that there's a chance that they might try to get rid of him before giving him a full opportunity to get his guys in there and get that program on the right track?
Let's be honest, Mike. Texas is probably, if not the most conservative, probably one of the top 2 or 3 conservative states in this country. And let's keep it real. Can we keep it real? Conservative means white male. Traditional white male values. That's what conservative means. Conservative is code word for white male values. And I'm telling you, Texas is one of the most white male value states in the country. And when a black man comes in to the flagship of the state and starts running their athletic program, you are going to have some people with some real issues. And if that man don't win immediately, they're going to be looking to get rid of him halfway through the season. Let him lose 3 or 4 games in a row. They're going to be ready to get rid of him already. They ain't even going to give him a chance.
I mean, there's a valid point where you're saying, Tony, but I seen Tex had put that on his Facebook. He said, when they going to let Charlie Strong, how long? He had posted something on saying like, that they already got the firing for him. I'm like, what? Why he say that? I didn't respond back, but I remember something about that when he was saying. But I hope they give the man a chance. I mean, I guess that was a counter what they did to see A&M getting Kevin Sumlin. But I think it's going to take at least a couple years, 2 years. Should give them 3, but hopefully they give them 3, but at least maybe 2 years.
I mean, we talked about it before. Talent-wise, University of Texas, you know, they should have at least had at least two titles, or at least they should, you know, they should have probably at least 2 titles during Mac Brown's run there, at least 2. You know, they had some really talented teams there. And, it seems like they had to have a transcendent player like Vince Young, you know, when he was in college to get them over the hump. But they, you know, they were putting out some talent when, back in the early 2000s, late 90s.
Tonight I'm not going to hold my tongue about race, because there are a lot of things going on in this country right now that's dealing with race, and everybody's trying to just blow it under the cover and trying to keep it covert, and I'm sick of that shit. I am very overt about this right now.
Hey, I'm on right now. I want to listen to this stuff tonight.
Okay, we got Clauzel Mathis with us.
Hey, Watley don't even filter now, so if he considers himself covering up so far from what he said.
Me and Tony, we talked about it on Facebook. You know, it comes to a point where it's like, if it's going to be out there, let's just put it out there. And let's call, you know, like the saying goes, let's call it paid.
Around the bush. For example, we're talking about the University of Texas, and we're talking about Southern politics. in the Southern schools, there is a code. Yeah, you let the niggas play, but the niggas have certain positions. They're the running backs. They're the receivers. They're all the speed positions. But our white boys are supposed to be the quarterbacks. Our white boys are supposed to be the linemen. Our white boys are supposed to be those type of positions. And when you come in and you start changing around the way things are, remember, we're talking conservative. Conservative means we don't like change. That's what conservative means. We like things to stay the way they've always been, Jim Crow. And when you come in and start changing the way we like things, we don't like you. And that is the problem that you have in some of these places, like a school like Texas, a school like Tennessee, a school like Mississippi. You can come in and make changes, but there's certain positions that should never change. And when you go touching those positions and you go ruining those traditions, then some people have real problems. Like, you know, for example, let's say the guard position at Mississippi. I'm just using this as an example. Every single guard at Mississippi since 1924 has been a big white boy. So the guards at Mississippi have their own little guard fraternity. And then you want to go and put some 6'7", 400-pound black dude in there. And I'm telling you, as much as that may not be a thing to nobody else in America, somebody in Mississippi is going to be pissed off. Why? Because they have had a tradition that guards in Mississippi are white boys. And if you go and put that black boy in that white boy position, we got a problem. That's why during Steve Spurrier's time, you never seen a black quarterback at the University of Florida. It's because he is a prejudiced, redneck bastard. And he refused to put a black man in a white man's position.
Mm. People don't want to say this part, though. You know, we've all been talking about that. But the time before he had left, he did recruit Gavin Dickey.
He recruited him because he was under pressure because there was so much media that he had never done it. And he recruited him, but he never planned on playing him.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Dickey was eventually going to be planning to get switched to a wideout or something like that, too, like he ended up doing. So I don't know, but yeah, he did recruit him, though. Let me bring in another Florida boy here. I want to bring in, let's select James. James,
yeah,
what's going on, man?
Yeah,
what's CMT?
What's going on, James?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what Tony was saying, but he's pretty much, like, you know, pointed out the thing with, you know, Gavin Dickinson recruiting. But he didn't really, you know, he wasn't really going to play under Steve Spurrier. And if you think about it, if Spurrier was there, they probably wouldn't have had Cliff Speak either.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's the whole reason why Spurrier didn't even take the job back when he left Washington Redskins. Is because he was going to be hired back at Florida, but they told him Chris Leak has been the starter for 3 years. He's got 1 year left. If you come back, you have to leave him the starter. And Steve Spurrier told them, fuck you. You don't tell me who I start on my team, and I don't want your job if he's got to be my quarterback. And he went to South Carolina. That's why Steve Spurrier is in South Carolina today, is because he refused to start Chris Leak as his starting quarterback. That is the truth.
Yep. And he hasn't recruited a black quarterback in South Carolina either.
I got, like I said, I got reservations about the whole state of South Carolina as a whole. That I even though we're supposed to be speaking out, I'll just say that they're not too friendly with black people in my eyes in that state. You know, any state that still flies a Confederate flag at the Capitol, I have issues with.
And the sad part about that with South Carolina is it has a majority black people. South Carolina has a 50-something percent majority of black people, and it's one of the most racist states in the union.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, we had last year we had Brenston Buckner on. He was a Clemson alum, And, you know, we were asking him about Marcus Lattimore, you know, because a lot of people thought that he should have boycotted South Carolina or went to another school. And, you know, some people, you know, they say, you know, a lot of times the players, they just, you know, I guess maybe they don't have time to try to make change or, you know, I don't know, you know, or they're too young to, you know, to think about what kind of situation they're going into or, cause like I say, it just amazes, you know, sometimes it amazes me, you know, that a player will sign with a certain school under a certain guy and it's like, you know, wow, you don't know what's going on there, you know, so I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of one of the things with black folks. But it's sad because you can't get nothing to sign with HBCU anymore, but they'll all go to South Carolina. Anyway, like I said, I think that was Tex, like you say, Mike, who brought that up, and about Charlie Strong, how long it'll take before he gets, before they fire him.
I wanted to hit up on that, right? I mean,
the thing
about the University of Texas is that you would think that there would be a much better program, you know, as far as results are concerned than they are because, I mean, if people think about it, they're the ones that get, like, amongst the highest amount of revenue, you know, as far as, like, college schools. I mean, you got Alabama, you got Ohio State, you got, like, USC, you have Texas. Those are pretty much, you know, like, top 5, 6, or 10. So when you have all those resources, you would think they would be able to string off, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, top 5, top 10 recruiting classes, but they haven't been able to do it. And now you got him, you know, being able to join the SEC and being able to be involved with, you know, the exclusive network rights with CBS and now, you know, their own network. Now, Texas A&M has been able to catch up and almost seems like they're like passing as far as popularity is concerned. So,
is that, and it, think about that. And it only took what, 3 years?
About 2 years, I would say two.
2 years, yep.
And
this is a nationally program.
Yeah, you only had like you know Manziel there for like 2 years, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is.
I mean, that's
what
people know the state of football at UT. You know. 2 years and you guys are out, you know.
Yeah, that's all it took. I was like, God, dog. How in the world a program that was pretty much your little brother for all those years, you know, been able to take over as far as like, you know, the whole interest of recruits around the state of Texas and all around the nation before you. That don't make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was elaborating on that part too. I was saying, you know, when they was kept, you know, down, you know, I know Clausel and Mike was saying they don't know if things go that bad, they probably was going to get someone out of there. And me and Texas like, nah, someone got Texas, man. It comes from because he had coached in Texas. Remember, he coached at Houston. Remember the times they had an undefeated season the year before he had left? You know, he just left because they couldn't pay him the money he wanted. And also, Texas A&M was about to head to the SEC, so shoot, you ain't going to turn that down. Is just
right.
to me that helped him a lot because he coached in Texas in the Houston, you know, he coached at Houston, so that's able him to get recruits there because his track record right in Houston.
Yeah, and that's one thing, and I think like what some of those Texas recruits also go to like LSU also in the SEC, if I'm not mistaken. So you know, the Longhorns have been pretty much you know. That for the past 5 or 6 or 7 years as far as like recruits are going.
Well, I mean, think about it. We know we've heard Jameis Winston say that if Mac Brown would have reached out to him, he'd be a Longhorn right now. You know, that's a history changing, you know, that's a history changing miss right there. You know, that
could have been the second wave of Vince Young maybe. Who knows?
Yep.
Exactly.
You know,
Also, to win Andrew Luck in that category, too. Like, Texas, because, you know, he played in Texas.
Andrew Luck is from Texas. Andrew Luck's from Texas. Johnny Manziel.
Like,
who are we talking about? RG3. You know.
I mean, he missed out with the Baylor. I mean
they've been
notorious.
It's funny because Texas has been putting out a lot of good quarterback recruits lately, and it seems like UT is just whiffing left and right. you know?
Yep.
So it's
From Colt McCoy was to me, from Colt McCoy to the last, I mean, well, you know, he didn't pan out. The last quarterback, that Gilbert, Jerron Gilbert, I think he was ranked like one of the top quarterbacks in the country, but he just, he never left up, you know, had the height. He never, you know, got it done at Texas.
Yeah.
They did get him. Ever since then, they just haven't had nobody.
Garrett Gilbert, yeah. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's just weird. Like you said, 2 years, and you got the, you know, they are the highest revenue program in the country. In 2 years, they've already been, you know, getting taken over recruiting and success-wise by A&M. So, like I said, hopefully they give – what's that?
I said also, too, they got their own network, man, Longhorn Network.
Yeah. You know, hopefully they give Charlie Strong enough time to get in there and work his magic and get that program
but
it, on.
But that Longhorn Network, is it really like a national network, though? You know what I mean?
It's not.
It's not like, you know, it has exclusive, you know, TV rights, you know, that anybody can watch their football games like Notre Dame does with NBC. So how much of a difference is it?
Yeah.
I mean, by the schools, like, you know, the network, you know how schools share like the SEC, but they got their own. Texas got their own Longhorn Network where it's all Texas.
Every college has their own network. The University of Florida, the University of South Florida, they all have their own television station.
Yeah.
But in reference to sports.
Yeah, I'm saying the whole thing, like the whole network is catered, where it says Longhorn Network catered to the whole Texas program. I haven't seen no other school that they own. Other, you know, Notre Dame have an NBC, but still, they're broadcasting their games, but Texas has their own network.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The University of Florida has its own television network. The University of South Florida has its own television network where they do the news. They do radio spots. They do all types of things. They have their own network.
But tell me, that's kind of different. It's not like, you know, WFSU or WSF or, you know, Pink Television or something like that. You know, those are like, you know, you get those in regular cable networks. I'm not going to be able to get WFSU over here in, you know, Virginia. But I could probably order the Longhorn Network and get it here in Virginia. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's kind of different in that sense, is that with the Longhorn Network, they show football, they show basketball, they show soccer. They'll show, like, specials on student-athletes that play lacrosse and that type of thing. That's what the Longhorn Network is basically all about. So it's not like you're going to necessarily see news from, Austin, Texas coming out of the Longhorn Network. I don't think that they're going to be doing that. You know, this is basically all sports all the time with the Longhorn Network.
Okay.
Exactly.
I want
to go to a channel for sports. That's the only school network coming up, that Longhorn Network.
Okay. I want to switch gears here again. With everything going on in the college football world and in the football world in general, somehow this has gone very far under the radar, and I want to know what you guys think about this. It's almost like they tried to slip it in there, like they tried to wait until so much shit going on, they slipped this in there, and, you know, and nobody picked up about it. What do you guys think about the fact that Penn State is no longer under sanction?
Ooh. I mean, I could say something about it. I think somebody said something on it. You know why they pretty much did that?
Why
try to save face for the conference.
Mm.
You know,
they have been looking good lately too.
They have been looking good, but the thing about it is that, I mean, they're pretty much 2-0. Hardly anybody else in that conference is 2-0, and if they are 2-0, then it's really, you know.
Also, I was gonna say one of their ADs, I think, was former senator. I think that has some help too. He has some type of special position with the athletic department. So we overseeing that. So I think that's the main reason why they got off.
I think it's all about money. I think it's all about dollar signs. And I think what they're seeing is the conference is so weak right now that there is a very good chance that Penn State wins the Big Ten this year. And if Penn State wins the Big Ten and you don't let them go to a bowl game, do you know how many millions of dollars the conference loses? I mean tens of millions. And they are trying to see the future. They're trying to project, and they're trying to say, oh, my goodness, this team might actually win it all. And if this team wins it all, they can't be kept from a bowl game because that will cost the conference. And I think it had to do with money. I think that's what it had to do with.
Major money game. Clausel, you on right now?
Yeah, I'm on.
What do you think about this? And do me a favor, I got to be on hold for about 5 minutes. So go ahead and take over the conversation, but continue talking about this though, because Tony was hitting on the right thing too. You guys go ahead.
Hold on, I'm kind of lost. Are we talking about Ray Rice, or are we talking about Charlie Strong?
Penn State being taken off thing.
I mean, you know, they have that sympathy, man. You know, when certain demographic of people want something to happen, if you can rally behind and get them to get it to happen, it's going to happen. So, you know, people felt sorry for Penn State. You know, I don't think they should have had their suspension lifted, but it is what it is. That's how it is. I really don't have much else to say on that issue. Yeah, in regards to Texas, I agree with Watley. I mean, you know, it's one of the most conservative states in America. The same thing's going on in Alabama with Jacob Coker and Blake Sims. Obviously, Sims looks better, but they want Coker as a starter. You know, they want their kind
in
certain positions.
In Alabama, with a black quarterback, I know a lot of people are like, what?
Yeah, the backup quarterback at Florida.
Yeah, Bama.
What'd you say?
Bama ain't really had a black quarterback out there since Andrew Zell in 99-03, right? Well, 02.
Yep, and they didn't want him. They were trying to get rid of Andrew Zell. I don't know if you guys remember. Yeah.
Yeah,
they don't want a brother at a quarterback in Alabama. The same goes for the Gators too. The backup quarterback allegedly is pretty Florida. He's a brother, so
yes.
I don't know how.
And like I said, it's all about the conservative ideology. We don't mind that you put these black people into our program, but they need to know their fucking place. Black people are supposed to be the fast people, the running backs and the receivers and those people. But as far as the real football team, the linemen and the quarterback, they're supposed to be our people. And that's how they think. And if you tell me they don't, then you're lying, because that's how they think.
Well,
you just put them in for the touchdowns, and you put them in to score the points, but all of the necessary positions need to be white boys.
And really, Wiley, I mean, I know, and I'm glad you came out and said that, but you know that same dynamic goes on in the NFL, too. And you know what area I'm talking about. You know that I'm talking about where that dynamic goes. So
yes, absolutely. I mean, if we're keeping it real, let's keep it real, because that's what's really happening. They have certain designations for black people in everything. That's just like in a job. You can be the manager, you can be the supervisor, but you ain't never going to be the boss. You ain't never going to be the executive board, and the only way you're going to be the executive board is if somebody complains and says affirmative action something or another, and we got to hire one of you niggas on the top level. Other than that, you ain't getting there. Why? Because it's a fraternity of white men.
I want to be part of the executive board too, but I ain't even gonna go that far with it.
They still exist out there, yeah. I was gonna say yeah, because it's kind of wild. Like we were talking about, you know, saying back to Alabama quarterback. I mean, I was saying on the show last week, I think, you know, he got some ways to go. I think he has an upside in skill wise. I think he's better than AJ Perrin. I like what I've seen in films. You know, I see Alabama play this week, and they were talking about the Coke War. They get other guys some time to see what he can do. But, like, man, Now you're starting a quarterback controversy, man. You don't need to have that. I mean, he played well. Now that could divide the locker room, all this and that.
Pauzel, did you hear Mike say that he thinks that – did you hear Mike earlier when he said that he thinks that A&M could beat your boys?
They could right now because our defense is suspect.
They beat them 2 years ago.
Huh? No, they didn't beat us last year. No, I mean, the most impressive team in the school right now. I'm an objective person here. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm an objective. I'm
you
always
are?
Yes, I am. Right now, the most impressive team in the SEC is Texas A&M. That's the most impressive team in the SEC. Right now. Now, we're going to see how Alabama plays out for the rest of the season. I think the talent is there. I know the talent is there at Alabama. We see it. But to gel it together, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, I think they need some improvement. Now, the offensive side of the ball is pretty good. I mean, I think Blake Sims is doing pretty a good job. That's just my personal opinion. I think he's doing a good job. Now, you know, Florida's coming up next week, and you know Florida looks like they can play. So we're going to see what happens next week when Florida plays. And if they play, if Blake Sims kind of slips up a little bit, there's going to be some problems.
You know, I was going to bring that up too. I didn't want to get Tony too gassed up, but University of Florida, I checked them out. They did look kind of good. It looks like they might have finally got their offense. So you know, they already had a defense in place. They can get that offense going. They're going to be giving people some issues this year.
It was all about Driscoll. When Driscoll came in, he was the next Tebow. They had already planned for him to be the next Tebow. And then he got hurt, and it threw everything into a tailspin. They had to play that black quarterback. They didn't know what to do with him. They had not set up the team around him. He wanted to take off running. He couldn't throw. And it just threw the entire offense off. And when it threw the entire offense off, their season went down the drain. With Driscoll back, everybody's back on plan. Everybody's back on focus. And Florida this year is what Florida thought they were going to be last year.
That's something.
Well, I mean, I just ain't all that now.
You know, it's funny, too, because Brissett was actually looking pretty good at North Carolina in their game.
No. I mean, yeah, you could take off running and throw a couple of times, but the thing is, the offensive coordinator had set up an offense around a pocket quarterback. So you put certain receivers in for a pocket quarterback. You put certain linemen in for a pocket quarterback. Everything is centered around that pocket quarterback. Then the pocket quarterback gets hurt, and then you throw in this running quarterback who doesn't have as good an arm, who doesn't throw as accurately, and it's a situation of where everybody is like, what the hell is going on? You know, you can't block the same way because he's moving all the damn time. You can't you can't run your route the same way because he's not precise enough to hit that spot. He's just throwing, trying to hit you, but you're on the move, so he can't hit a spot. He's not throwing to a spot. He's throwing to a person. And when the person is moving, he misses his spot every time. So it's one of those situations of where they planned an entire offense around a pocket quarterback, and then their pocket quarterback got hurt, and they got immediately replace him with a running quarterback. And when you immediately have to replace him with a running quarterback, you didn't get time to practice. You didn't get time to prepare. You didn't get time to adjust. You just got to get out there and play, and they got their asses handed to them.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens when they face Bama. That could maybe be the game that kind of puts them back on the map.
I agree with Clausell. Bama's defense looks suspect. And if Bama's going to let a team like West Virginia score that many points on them, than a team like Florida, who just put up 65 and didn't give up a point, might come down into Bama and show them a game.
Well,
That West Virginia game was really close. They just missed on some opportunities. They had the ball bounce their way and made some couple catches shoot. West Virginia might could have pulled that out.
Yeah. Well, you know, no matter what anybody says, every team, you know, they're eventually going to hit a lull. So, you know, it happens to everybody. Clauzel, what do you think about FSU going through week two now?
I mean, I think FSU still is really talented. I think they're clearly still a top three team. But I think that, I don't know, the whole situation that's going on with Jameis, you know, it may be a distraction, and I don't know, that might affect him throughout the rest of the season. But I still expect Florida State to win all their games, though. I think they're going to win all their games. I still think Jameis Winston is the best prospect I've seen in the past 20 years. He will be a superstar player in the NFL. We know
something. You got to admit. Like you said, maybe it's because the attention. Something's not clicking though, man.
No, he was looking good this Saturday. He was looking good on Saturday. He was very accurate.
Did he look good or did he look Heisman good? I mean, I don't know, man.
Yeah, he looked Heisman good against the Citadel. He looked Heisman good against the Citadel. You talking about against Oklahoma State? No, he didn't look Heisman good, but against the Citadel, he looked pretty good against the Citadel.
Yeah. I mean, but that Citadel, but still, he just, I don't know. Maybe it's because I know what to expect from him, so you expect more. But, you know, I don't know.
I'd look good against the Florida State Peewees.
Yeah, maybe he's a guy we just come to expect a little bit more from. We know how talented he is. But I don't know. That's going to be something else we can keep eye on. Let's move on to NFL here. We had week one of the NFL. A lot of games, a lot of big games. Let's start off with the exciting one, Atlanta versus New Orleans. You know, me, Tony, I think maybe a couple other guys had New Orleans picked as a preseason to go to the Super Bowl and possibly win it. Atlanta came out and pulled out the win with their overtime field goal. Does this change any impressions? What did you guys think of that game? Let's start off with you, Clauzel.
Of the Atlanta game in New Orleans?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying? Well, yeah, I thought that, you know, very good comeback by Atlanta. Matt Ryan, you know, he looks a lot better with Julio, so I'm glad with that. Mark Ingram, I thought Mark Ingram looked pretty good. You know, I still am a believer in Mark Ingram. He's on my fantasy team. Julio Jones on my fantasy team. But I vaguely saw the game. I saw the end of the game, but I didn't really look at it in the middle of the game. But it looks like, you know, that offense is back in full with Atlanta. And, you know, if they can keep that offense and shore up that defense, they're going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
You talking about the Falcons?
Yeah.
What do you think about the Falcons-Saints game, Mark?
Oh, man. You know, I had the Saints winning that game, of course, winning that division. But, hey, it was a close game. They got the talent, you know, so we'll see how it goes. The downfall with them has been their defense, you know. Their defense wasn't as good last year, so we'll see what happens. Even though they won 1-0 and Saints 0-1, I still ain't going to change it. I still got the Saints winning that division. But the team that could give them a battle, of course, is them Dirty Birds.
Okay. What about you, Tom?
Are we just talking about the Saints? Because, you know, that ain't the team in that division that is my favorite team.
Right now, we're just talking about Saints Falcons.
Okay, since we're just talking about the Saints, I think that this whole defense thing with Ryan is not working out, and I'm just going to be honest about that because this is what the guy's third year, second year, or something like that, And, you know, he's supposed to be this defensive genius. And last year, they looked very suspect in their defense. That's why they didn't go on in the playoffs like they should have. And this year, they've already started out, and Atlanta's offense took advantage of that defense. So, you know, that whole Ryan defense thing that they keep talking about supposed to be so good, it's disappointing me right now, because that was the reason why I predicted the Saints to win it, is because if this defense was supposed to be what they keep saying it's going to be, and the offense continues to be what it always is, who's going to beat the Saints? Well, the offense is doing what it's supposed to do, but the defense is not living up to all these expectations. And either something has to change for that defense, or I think the Saints might be in trouble. They may not even win their own division.
Yeah,
to blow a lead like that, though, because they was up on them, and they just lose like that, like, wow.
Yeah, that defense, you know, it hasn't been the same since they got rid of, old boy. I can't even think of his name, you know, from the targeting scandal a couple of years ago.
Exactly.
So it'll be something to watch. Like I say, you know, Breeze, I was excited to see him and Brandon Cooks hook up for a TD. But even their offense really didn't, you know, it really didn't impress me that much. But I like the way the Falcons looked. Like Clausell said, I got to give his boy props. Julio Jones looked good. Matt Ryan looked really good. I'm glad because I got him as my fantasy quarterback. So it'll be interesting to see what the Falcons do. What about your boy? And you were wrong, Tony. I don't know if you came out and admitted it yet, because you said Cam Newton would be starting Week 1, which he wasn't. What are your thoughts about the Carolina Panthers now? You think Cam's going to come back in Week 2 or what? I don't know.
Absolutely. I was wrong, but I was saying it from a strategist's point of view. This is a division game. You're in a division where all four teams are playing each other in your division. So the two winners are already at the top of your division in Week 1. That's a big deal. When you are playing championship football, where you stand in the division matters. And I was thinking, with that in mind, they would play Cam to win this game. But it's obvious to me, they thought, since they were playing Tampa, they could beat Tampa without Cam, and they were right. So I see that, and I agree with that now in hindsight, but as a coach, I'm going to be honest, I wouldn't have done it, because for me, I want to get that division win. The division is where you get to the playoffs. Without winning your division, you got to win a whole lot of games to get into the playoffs. And you'd much rather just win your division, and then you don't have to worry about it. So that division game to me was a very important game, and I figured because it was so important, they would play Cam. But those boys look good without him, which means when he plays, that is the team to watch out for in the NFC South. I'm telling you. And didn't I tell y'all Kelvin Benjamin was going to be a man? I told y'all Kevin Benjamin was going to be the man. I told y'all, and this was before the season. I told y'all before the college season was up that the only reason Winston was Kelvin Benjamin. I'm telling you right now, Kevin Benjamin is the man.
That's some BS. First of all, you're basing this off of one game. Come on, man. You can't base
Kevin Benjamin
the whole
is
thing.
The man.
I mean, what's he done? Hold on. What has he done? I mean, you used to stop a game. I mean, we thought Michael Clayton was going to be a superstar. Will he out the league? I mean,
Wait a minute. What has he done? He scored he got 100 yards and a touchdown with a backup quarterback in his very first NFL game. That's what he's done.
Well, and it's the same. And it's the same as a good defense too.
That's what he does. 100 yards and a touchdown in his very first NFL game with a backup quarterback.
All right, we'll see. Just keep. Let's just keep going. Let's see what happens. Game by game. Well, I know Jameis Winston. Hold on, Jameis Winston. If you look at that game last week, Jameis Winston didn't seem like he dropped a beat because he was very lethally accurate. At last week, and he was actually, if you look at the first quarter stats, he was very lethally accurate against Oklahoma State until the second quarter. I don't think Jameis Winston dropped a beat. Honest. That is my personal opinion. Now maybe he
can we all laugh together?
Maybe he lost focus in that Oklahoma State, but I think his accuracy is still there. You said he had a bad game. He threw for 370 yards his first game.
He threw for two interceptions, and he did not throw for those yards.
He still threw for 370 yards, so or 340.
Oh my God. He did not throw for those yards. He throws a little 5-yard
dump-off,
and then they won 80
really
yards.
He dropped a beat, and you know good and well that's the
truth.
Oh, my God.
Whatever.
The fact that the Carolina Panthers won this game, what does that mean for Cam Newton?
In terms of him?
Yeah.
Like being long term?
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I told you, man. You already know my view on
that's
Cam.
That's why I said I wasn't too upset to say good because I thought he was kind of beeping it. I was like, damn, maybe this is the beginning.
He'll get his job back, but I don't think they're going to re-sign him long term. I already said that. They ain't re-signing him. They don't want him. The city doesn't want him. You thought it was bad with Josh Freeman in Tampa. Watch with this Cam. If they don't make the playoffs, which I don't think they will. You watch. They're gonna the Heat's gonna turn to Cam. Trust me.
I'm gonna make a prediction right now, and it ties back
into what Watley was saying about conservative states in America. They don't want him. But see, this is the thing with Cam, this is what's unique about Cam and Winston. Winston would be like, I don't care. You know, you can think what you want to think. I'm gonna do what I do. I'm gonna be me. Cam is trying to assimilate to try to get them to like him to be better. That's the difference.
You'd be acting like Jameis Winston is the Fonz or somebody. Like, he's just, like, the coolest dude. He doesn't care. And this kick-ass, you know,
Fonz.
Cool. He's very secure. He's very secure in who he is. And he can care less what people think about him.
What are you basing any of that off of?
What am I basing this on?
Look at how he acts. Look at how his personality is. He's strictly himself. He's a slang talking. He's going to do whatever he wants to do, and he's not going to apologize for who he is. He's not going to apologize. So Cam Newton, he would be apologizing. He'd be trying to assimilate. He's trying to do everything to be liked, and they ain't going to like him. That's the point I'm trying to make. They ain't going to like him.
Did you really say Jameis Winston thinks he's the Fonz?
Dude, man, it almost seems like you're ready to put Cam Newton on the train.
No. I'm not putting Cam Newton on the train. No. I'm not because Cam's just doing it for money. He wants to make I ain't gonna blame a brother that want to get paid. You know, he wants to get more endorsements. He wants to get paid. I'm all cool.
But
with
I mean,
that.
Okay,
you know,
but look, this is my thing though. We kind of started this, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and we're gonna continue because it's gonna lead us into this Ray Rice situation. Image is everything. So why is it bad that Cam Newton is trying to improve his image?
No, he's trying to make money. Do what you do. But I got a little bit more respect for a person that's going to be like, hey, I'm going to be who I am. And if you don't like it, oh, well.
How can you say what he's going to be until he gets in the NFL? You keep talking all this craziness.
You don't know how he's going to be
until he gets into the NFL.
Well, there's a lot of signs. You can look at past behavior. That kind of has a good indication of future behavior.
Okay, but look at Cam's past behavior. The whole reason why he had to leave the University of Florida is because they said he was stealing and all kinds of other stuff. If past behavior has anything to do with it, then Jameis ain't no different than Cam in college. But look at Cam in the NFL.
They're not different. They're not different. That's the point I'm trying to say. But the difference is Cam is trying to slip people that he's different. That's the difference. Whereas Jameis is not going to want to do that. He's not going to care.
How do you know what he's going to do once he gets in? You don't know that.
But I know his personality. His personality is like, hey, you know what? You accept me for who I am. If you don't like it, I could care less.
Wow.
You still got to wait. Like, tell me right, though. You never know. You still got to see what happens in the next level. And
but
NFL, you know?
I can't wait to see what happens. That's what I'm looking forward to this. That's why I said I'm really looking forward to what happens in the league, you know. That's why I equate Jameis Winston. He's going to be the Allen Iverson of the NFL. He will be the Allen Iverson of the NFL. He equated that right there. He's going to be highly scrutinized, but he will be a superstar player. That's different. Allen Iverson was a superstar basketball
player. You want me to give you analysis? I think he's going to be the Ray Rice of the NFL. He is going to go and do something stupid and hit some ball or something while he's still in college, and he ain't never even going to make it.
I hope that doesn't happen, though, but, you know, dang.
Whoop. We shall see.
Damn, Ray Rice.
Okay. What other games did you guys check out? What game stood out to you? I watched the 49er game, and Colin Kaepernick looked really good. You know, he made a couple of passes that only a guy like Colin Kaepernick can make. So I'm kind of excited about the Niners. What games did you guys see? What excited you about week one?
I'm telling you what, I have watched Seattle all last year. I predicted them to win the Super Bowl last year before the season started. They look better in game one than they looked in all their games last year. Them boys look like they are unbeatable. They were amazing. Offensively, defensively, special teams, they were solid across the board. I did not see a weakness, not one, in anything that they were doing. To me, Seattle Seahawks look like they are positioned to at least get back to the NFC Championship game.
Of course, I had them going to the Super Bowl representing the NFC against the Saints, which I just said the Saints because Drew Brees, you know, Super Bowl champion, but I think Seattle definitely the best team in the NFC. I mean, just how they beat Green Bay like that, I mean, shoot, taking Aaron Rodgers, I mean, their defense, like, wow, man. I mean, don't get any better than that.
Right, you seen the way in that first game Denver came out last year against Baltimore, who was the Super Bowl champions from the year before, and they blasted Baltimore. And it was one of those things where that very first game you could tell there is something special about this Denver team last year, and they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, from the first game, the way they beat up Green Bay, there is something special about the Seattle Seahawks.
What other, Mike, what game stood out to you from week one?
Really, I got to say, still amazed about that New Orleans and Atlanta game, because I really had New Orleans in that one, but that was to show Atlanta, well, what a game. It's going to be a battle again next time. And really, of course, I had to go with Tony on that Seattle game. I knew Seattle was going to win, but I thought maybe it could go close, but they still got that form. You know, like, wow. But I give a little props to Denver, too. I mean, I thought Denver, the way how they was handling the Colts, but they let the Colts come back like that, but getting that win against them, you know, Peyton beating the Colts, I thought it was a feel-good, you know, win for him. And Cali Mike, I kind of give it to your San Francisco 49ers. I mean, they could be a team to go to the NFC Championship. I'm just looking at the injuries y'all have right now and, of course, the suspensions. I'm just not sure. That's the only thing I think that might could hold you all back to getting back to the NFC Championship.
From seeing both teams weekend, San Francisco 49ers cannot beat the Seattle Seahawks. They can't do it.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if you can tell that from seeing two teams play different teams. But Seattle did look very good. What do you guys think about Aaron Rodgers not passing it to Richard Sherman's side of the ball? Is Richard Sherman that guy now who people just don't pass to anymore?
He is the new Revis. Now it's Sherman's Island.
Yeah, it seems like it. You know, when you got maybe the most accurate quarterback in the league not wanting to try you, that kind of lets you know something. James, what did you think about week one?
Bale, what's up, dude? Where you at?
James, you on? All right, let me put you on hold. I want to bring in this other caller here. 813, you're on with CMT.
What's going on?
What's up,
David? What's going on?
How's it going, man?
Chilling.
All right, what did you think about week one of the NFL?
Look good. San Fran looked good. Seahawks looked good. That's pretty only two games I pretty much watched, and Atlanta pulled off a close game against the Saints. But San Francisco really looked good, and the Seahawks really looked good.
Okay, and who's your team?
Oh, my favorite team or my team I think going to win it?
Your favorite team?
Oh, my favorite team is the Bucks and the Raiders.
David, I am impressed. Any man that would admit that their favorite team is the Oakland Raiders is a true fan.
Yeah, I've been a Raiders fan since the 80s. Marcus Allen made me a Raiders fan.
Yeah, I am impressed with that. That's just like me calling myself a Knicks fan. It's been a long, long winter for the Knicks.
A long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the Raiders, though, I mean, with Carr, y'all do have, you know, a young quarterback. I still think you all messed up with Pryor. I like Pryor. I think y'all would have given him some more time and some weapons, but I guess you all wasn't feeling. Maybe coaching didn't feel him or management didn't feel too much about him. But I think Pryor, the quarterback, could have maybe done some things for y'all that, you know, he had that special ability. Remember, this man had that issue that happened where, you know, he had to – be Ohio State. This man was a top five or possibly a number one pick in the draft. So I just think y'all made a mistake on him, but.
Yeah, you may be right. I mean, the Raiders have a bad organization from front office on down, so they do that type of stuff.
I agree. I mean, I can't say I've ever been a Raider fan because I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and there was a time back in the 70s and 80s when the Raiders was our mortal enemy in the AFC because they were the other great team in the AFC. But it's been a long time since the Raiders have been our mortal enemy because it's been pretty good long time since the Raiders had any real significance in the AFC. So, you know, we have stopped, as a fan, I've stopped hating the Raiders. And I actually root for them now. It's like, come on, win a game.
I feel you.
It's gotten that bad. I feel, you know, but like, if you can stay a Raider fan, I would lift my fist up to you, my brother.
Yeah. I've always been a Raider fan since the 80s.
But, you know, like I tell people, I'm a Raider fan. But when I was growing up, there wasn't no Raiders in Oakland. So I became a Niner fan. Then when they moved back,
yeah.
Raider fan again.
Yeah, I feel you.
Niners, you know, the Niners were doing all the winning, too. So in the 80s, and the Raiders was in the 70s. So, yeah.
I got this question for you, Dave, and being a Raider fan. What the hell is going on with the backfield in Oakland? Are they going to do something with McFadden, or are they going to do something with Jones Drew? What are they going to do? Why? What is going on in that backfield?
But did you watch the game? Did you see the first run where Maurice Jones Drew kicked the ball up in the air like 10 yards behind him?
What is going on in that backfield?
Oh my goodness!
But see, that's the issue.
I don't know, man.
If McFadden would have played on another team, he probably would be a much better running back. But the
I agree.
They never developed that guy.
Yeah,
right.
So that guy could have been one of the best backs in the NFL. But the Raiders just never developed him, so he always showed those flashes, but you never saw that consistency.
And you know what? I think it's the same thing with quarterbacks out there in Oakland, David. They have had some great quarterbacks come out there to just fall apart because they didn't develop them. And I really believe there has been some great quarterbacks that have gone to Oakland and just disappeared off the map.
Right.
That's true. Well, you know, keep an eye out on David Carr, man. I was big on him in the draft, and dude looks good. He can sling the rock, man. So hopefully they can develop him, and, you know, it's going to take some draft picks because, like I said, they ain't looking too good. But I think we finally got a quarterback in place. I like the way Carr is looking. What about
okay.
you, Dave?
Okay. I mean, I haven't seen him play yet. I mean, hopefully that him and Khalil Mack can try to do something and not disappear off the planet. Because, you know, a lot of guys go to the Raiders and they just disappear. You know, so hopefully they can try to turn that shit around because Khalil Mack got a lot of talent, and I would hate to have the Raiders, you know, fuck his career up.
Yeah. You know, but Oakland is known for – Oakland is called the black hole for more reasons than one. It ain't just the fan section, unfortunately. A lot of times players go there and, like you're saying, just disappears. So it'll be something to see. Like I said, I'm just glad we finally got a quarterback in place.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I can at least be sure.
So
you know,
you already, so football. You so you didn't like Pryor?
I mean, he never developed. You know, these guys they gotta realize. You know, you get 2 or 3 years, you know, to develop, you know. So no team, you know, no matter how many flashes you show, no team is going to wait, you know, 4 or 5 years for a guy. You can't, especially, you know, now that the rules have changed where you can almost draft a quarterback in every draft and it really ain't going to hurt you, you know. So, you need to come in and show what you can do, you know. And he came in and he looked good in some things, but it's like, you know, you figure – I would really want to know what he did for that year off of football. You know, it's like was he in the weight? You know, was he in the film room? Was he practicing with a coach, or you know, was he out high side? I would have to know that. You know, because it didn't seem. You know, it seemed like when he was at Ohio State, he was becoming a better passer, and it didn't seem like he developed from when he got suspended to when he got when he finally got a chance with the Raiders. You know, that was
I'm gonna be honest with you. The real problem I see, and when you keep saying the word development, it's on the Raiders and it's on some other teams too, like Vince Young, he went to Tennessee. I think it's turned around a little bit in Tennessee, but when Vince Young went to Tennessee, they had development issues too. And when I say development, what I mean is you got to understand who these people are. These are 20-year-old kids who has just been told you're about to become a millionaire, a multimillionaire. That's where you got to start. These are 20-year-old kids. A lot of them grew up poor in the projects, not having nothing, and you have just been told you are about to become a millionaire. The development is not a physical development. It's a mental development because they are coming from these programs where they were seen as the superheroes. They were the quality, they were the star quarterback. They were the star running back. They were the star receivers. Everybody loved them. Everybody wanted them. Everybody thought they were perfect. All of the analysts, all of the media, everybody's telling them they're the shit. So it's going to their head. They're 20 years old. And then they get drafted. And once they get drafted, not only do they think they're the shit, they're a million piece of shit. So it's a situation of where now they got the money, they got the girls, they got the attention, they got everything. And then they go to these teams, and some of these teams say, you got it, now go out there and show us. And they don't work on those kids' minds. They don't work on that mental development to make them understand, look, while you were the hero at this college, now you are in a situation where everybody else out there on the field were also the heroes at their college. You are not the superhero anymore. Everybody out there on that field is a superhero because they all made it to the NFL. And they don't go into it thinking that. They don't go into it mentally developed like that. They go into it thinking they're still the best player on the field. Then they go out there and get their ass handed to them a couple of times. And then they go out there and they're not performing like they were performing in college. And mentally, they get depressed. They get to the situation of where they realize they're not Superman no more. They're just another man on the field. And then their whole mentality about playing football changes because they lost that superhero complex. And it was the superhero complex that made them think they were a superhero. But now that they think they're average, they start playing average. And I really think that the development that some of these kids are missing has nothing to do with physical. It has to do with mental. Some of these programs do not mentally develop these kids from that 20-year-old kid that's been fighting to be something special all his life into that 20-year-old millionaire that's got it all in his hands.
I agree. Talking about that, what for a guy like Mr. Perfect, Jameis Winston, who Clauso says is going to refuse to change his mindset, I mean, like I said, when you hear about a guy like that, does that sound like a guy that you think you could even try to develop? Someone who's going to do things the way he wants to, no matter what.
Well, there are some, like I said, there are some programs that are very good at development. I love a team that is a very good developing team. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they are a very good developing team. When you come in there, they make you understand this is not a team, this is a family. We do everything together. Huh?
Well, there's special individuals, Kelly, that can handle having issues mentally, but yet be very good. I mean, this dude is a naturally gifted quarterback. So,
quarterback that came to the NFL is not a naturally gifted quarterback.
Todd Marinovich. I don't think that there's a lot of quarterbacks that ain't came in here. Oh God.
Hey. Oh my God! Don't start this Winston stuff.
He's the most hyped.
Oh my God!
What? Good.
Oh my
college
God!
College football.
Oh my God! This is the most wasted 30 seconds of this entire program.
Hey, but what I'm saying is I think his talent level – see, what I'm saying is his talent level is that high. I think that he can account for those mental miscues. I think he can account for those mental miscues because his talent level, I believe, is that high.
Oh, wow. Really? So you're going to tell me Pryor and all of those other people that went to Oakland's talent level wasn't that high?
They weren't better. They weren't better passers than Winston. No, they weren't.
They were just as good athletes. Not better.
But they weren't. They were not as good as a passer as Winston. They were not good in terms of the quarterback football IQ from the neck up. They were not.
Oh wow.
Okay, I mean, say what you want, man. Winston is the best passer I've seen in about 15, 20 years.
Jamarcus Russell is rated the highest, one of the highest quarterback recruits ever.
Absolutely.
But Jamarcus Russell, we have a sample size. We have a sample size of what we've seen from Jameis Winston in clutch situation, in regular season, in all situations, that shows that this guy is a very good quarterback, a very accurate quarterback.
Jamarcus was the bomb while he was at LSU.
What are you talking about? No, he was not.
Wow, he wasn't?
Yes, he was.
No, he just looked the part. That's why people were drooling.
He didn't win no national championship for LSU.
That's a lie. He did not win.
I didn't say one. I said he took them. Didn't they go to the national championship under his senior year? No, that was after he left.
They went under Matt Flynn after he. It was either the year before or after him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that dude wasn't that good. If that dude was not as accurate as Winston, that dude just looked the part. That's different. Winston looks the part and plays the part. That's a different story. Come on, man. You try me with that mess.
Crab legs.
Don't get mad when you don't want to hear the truth. I mean, come on, man. It's the truth, man. I mean, you can't hate.
Where is that the truth? I see no truth in that. None.
In what? No truth in what?
No truth in that statement that he is the greatest passing quarterback in the history of college football.
I never said that he was the greatest passing quarterback in the history of football.
You keep saying he's the greatest passing quarterback.
You're saying that he's the greatest prospect you've ever seen. So what? You're saying that he's the greatest prospect you've ever seen.
I never said he was the greatest I've ever seen. I just say he's the best one I've seen in the past 15
okay,
years.
Okay, hold on. So who's the best you've ever seen?
Winston's up there, I won't lie.
You have said he's the best you've ever seen before.
I don't want you putting words in my mouth. You said before that he's the best prospect you've ever seen in the past 15 to 20 years. No, I said he's the best prospect I've seen in the past 15, 20 years since John Elway.
Dude, you're 30 years old. Quit acting like you're 60 or something.
How old are you, Fuzzy? In the last 20 years, he's the best. How old are you? If he's the best in the last 20 years, then you must have been seeing some amazing college quarterback at 10 years old.
You act like you were 2 years old watching John Elway at Stanford. You wasn't.
Exactly. I can't believe you saw Elway at Stanford. I can't believe that.
Come on, Clausel. So tell me.
Right? You got drafted in 85?
He was in the quarterback draft. What was it? 84, I think. 84, 83.
It was 84. Yeah, Elway got drafted in 84. So I mean, you had to see him, and you had to see him like in the early 80s. That's now.
Exactly. Yeah, which Clausel
couldn't have even seen. If you 30 years ago, 84 was 30 years ago. He was already in the NFL when you was born.
I'm older than that.
Exactly. Let's switch subjects. For anybody who wants to call in, number 347-237-5539. Let's jump into what we all want to get into, the big subject of the world right now. This is the world's greatest subject. We're about to talk about the evilest man on earth. So let's get into it. Jamarcus Russell. Ray Rice situation. We still got a lot of information coming in. The latest thing I just posted on the CMT group page, there is proof that the NFL did have a copy of the tape, and they've had it since April. That's the latest coming from the AP. I put the story up on the CMT group page.
I want to go through person by person. Now that we know everything, you know, now that we've all seen the tapes, the girl, you know, his wife has come out and spoken out against the crucifixion that's going on against him. I want to hear what everybody has to say. Tony, you made a very good point yesterday on the CHT, and I want to elaborate on that. So I want you to go last. Let's go down the line here, and I want everybody to let me know what their appraisal of this situation is. Let's start with you, Chi-Town.
Well, I saw that tape, man. Like, wow, man. Wow. I can't believe that. I mean, to make that decision, they had to see that tape, man. If the law enforcement seen it, anything like that, they would still have to have seen it to make any type of decision. They never had to have seen that tape. Because they're investigating, they have to see everything before they make a decision. And I always thought from the start, anyway, two games, he should have just been spending it definitely to further investigation. You know, I thought they messed up on that, but, man, they messed up big on this one, man. This wow. I think this is worse than the Michael Vick situation.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
You talking about, I mean, yeah, that was a dog. I mean, I was wrong on that, but
Mike, this is domestic
violence.
The ramification of the Michael Vick situation, this was a systematic business arranged of dog torture and death. So, you know, I don't know if it's the same thing as a guy making a 5-second mistake.
Yeah, but you didn't see Michael Vick shoot a dog. Had you seen a video of Michael Vick beating or shooting a dog, he'd have never been back in the NFL.
And also, too, even though it's wrong, it's, you know, underground dog worlds, I mean, in some places, it's legal for people to do some dog fighting. So that's what they do in the South. Y'all know, some of y'all know about that down there. So they do that. Some might say it's right, some say wrong, but hey, it exists.
All right, Clausel, what do you think about this situation, man?
I mean, honestly, I've been so busy, man. I followed it, but I really don't know the vast details. I just know there's a video that came out. He smacked his wife. Allegedly, his wife spit on him first. I don't know the details. I don't know specifics of it. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure the NFL knew about this. I'm pretty sure Goodell knew about that tape. And, you know, I mean, it's just making him look bad now. You know, he's got caught probably in a lie. You know, he said he suspected there was another tape. Come on, man. We know he knew there was another tape out there. He just, you know, want to act like he didn't, you know, he wants to just cover his behind. But I do think that, you know, it's just strange that they want to just now suspend him more when they should just kept to their guns. That's my personal opinion. And let it be. Let him, I mean, he would have been punished anyway. Everybody would have booed him and stuff like that in every game. His life would have been a living hell if he played this year. So it is what it is. I'm done.
Okay, go ahead, James. Oh, my bad. Hold on. Let me bring James back on.
Yeah,
James,
on.
Go ahead. Let us know what you think about this.
My thing is that why was the NFL acting pretty much being like a reactive organization in this situation? You know, first it was initially a 2-game suspension. And I really don't buy that they didn't know about the tape until pretty much after the fact. They had to have known some about it. And then they just wanted to hold off until, you know, a little bit of smoke came out. And then after that, then put the suspension on. And they even didn't do that until the Baltimore Ravens organization did something about it first. So that tells you something about the National Football League in general, that they pretty much want to.
Okay. Dave, what do you think about it, man?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the NFL will probably bow to like either public pressure or I forgot what you call those particular type of groups, advocacy groups, where they felt like it was making them look bad. So they just deep six the guy, which, you know, they don't give a fuck about no players anyway. So just get that guy out of the way, you know, and hopefully they can ride the storm and just keep it moving. You know, I just, you know, I think once the tape came out, they got embarrassed and they said, okay, well, let's try to make it look like we're really going to punish this dude. And they don't give a fuck about Ray Rice. So just keep it moving.
It's really – go ahead, Jay. I didn't mean to do that. Go ahead.
No, I was just replying to what David said. I'm like it's just a football player to the National Football League. They can find another Ray Rice somewhere to, you know, take over reins what he was doing. So it wasn't like, you know, they were really trying to cover up for him. They were just trying to cover up for their brand.
I was gonna say Lily is kind of a black mark for the Baltimore Ravens because they had to seen that tape and for all. I mean, if they had seen it, if they seen it and they decided to ignore it, knowing that, you know, NFL gave them 2 games, how they look on them or the organization. This guy represents your organization. You just seen this tape, or did you see it already? So they kind of in the dilemma right now. Saying, yeah, Ray's our guy. We support Ray. But after you see that tape, you're like, see how they was quickly to release him. So that's what I'm saying. You know, they got some answers and questions too.
Exactly. You know, yesterday on Cold Hard Truth, me and Tony, we were both on there. You know, we were talking about media perception and the perception of the event. And Tony made some good points about Ray Rice's, about his actions after he hit the woman and how that weighed in on things. So go ahead, Tony. I want you to talk about what you think of the information and talk about kind of what you was talking about yesterday about what he did after.
All right, I'm going to get into a deeper racist issue first, and I'm going to work my way down to the actual surface issue. I think the owner of the L.A. Clippers let a bone slip out of the closet. A bone that most people never thought about. And that is these billionaire white men who own these teams are like plantation owners. And the way that they see it is the players are simply their property, making them their money. It's a 21st century plantation. All you got to do is rethink your mind. Rethink who the owners are and rethink who their workers are in sports. And all they're doing is they're allowing these black people to work their teams, to work their plantation, to make them money. And as long as you work my plantation and you keep making me money and you don't embarrass me, I'll keep paying you. But the second you go and do something to embarrass me, you're out. There's no ifs, ands, ors, buts, or maybes. Why? Because just like you guys keep saying, I can easily replace you with another nigga. There's another nigga out there right now willing to take your place. And you don't act like I want you to act, you're going to be out, and I'll replace you with another nigga. So that they have this little fraternity going on. It's just like down in the South. All the plantation owners could get together and talk and this, that, the other. It's, you know, in the NFL, we call it the Owners Association, just like you have a Players Association. The owners get together. That's the group of the plantation owners, and they talk about their plantations. They don't really give a damn about wins and losses. They give a damn about profit. How can we make sure we all profit? How can we make sure we all are making the monies? Because All that matters to us is to keep having these slaves make some money for us. Then you get the Ray Rice situation. In the same way you would have it on a plantation, a slave don't went out in town and done something to a white woman, and it don't got back to the plantation owner. Your slave done went out in town where the white folks are and done something he shouldn't have done and embarrassed you and your plantation. Oh, we going to have to deal with that nigga. We going to have to deal with him. Now, the thing is, Ray Rice was the money cow at the Ravens organization. The running back was making them their money. People knew that. So the plantation owner was thinking to himself, wait a minute, this is my cash cow. This is my cash nigga. I can't let him go. Now, I got to punish him for going into town and doing something he shouldn't have did, but I can't let him go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to punish him, and then I'm going to put him back out there to keep making me my money. But the thing that he didn't stop to think was them people out in town saw what happened. And they went and told other people. And finally, the whole town came back to the plantation owner and said, oh, no, 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 no. Are you telling me that you going to keep a nigga that put his hand on a white woman? That don't happen here. Now, this is metaphorically. That's not what actually happened. I'm just saying metaphorically, that's what the town is telling the plantation owner. No, no, he don't step out of line. And because he stepped out of line, you got to get rid of, you hang that nigga, you got to kill him. And we need a public hanging. We need every white person in this town to see you string that nigga up. That's the only way we're going to be satisfied with you as a plantation owner to make sure that this gets done. So, once the outrage came back to the plantation owner, he went and decided, all right, as much as this is my cash cow, I can't have the whole town mad at me. So I'm going to have to go on and sacrifice this nigga. And they put that nigga on the cross. They put a noose around his neck, and they hung him from the nearest tree. And that is what happened metaphorically to Ray Rice. Now,
keep going. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I want to say something. You know what the sad part about it is? There's other slaves on the plantation that's like, go hang them.
Yeah.
There's slaves on the plantation. There's same slaves on that plantation. The bed winches.
A lot of bed winches going on right now.
They go like, go hang them. That's exactly what's going on. You're right. I agree with that. I kind of see where you're coming from metaphorically.
Yeah, keep going, Tony.
That's what's going on. This is a 21st century lynching on the billionaire's plantation. And that's what's going on. So now we get on the surface. The surface of it, Ray Rice and his girlfriend at the time had a fight. They had both been drinking. They were in a casino. People seem to forget where these two were. They were in a casino, gambling and drinking. A fight ensued. Before you see what you see on that camera, there had already been a fight. She openly admits this. She tells everybody this. She tells everybody that she had already hit him, and she had already spit on him before you saw this stuff on the camera, to the point he walked off. And that is why you saw him stop and wait for her to catch up, is because they had already been fighting. And when she or walked past him, he said something to her. He did not spit on her. He said something to her, and she slapped him in the mouth when she walked by. If you watch the tape, you see it. She slapped him in the mouth, and then she went on and got on the thing on the elevator. When she got on the elevator, he walked up to her. They started arguing. He pushed her. And when he pushed her, she charged at him. And when she charged at him, he cold-cocked her. The fight had been going on. This did not start when they saw the fucking camera, America. The fight didn't start when they saw the camera. It wasn't like, oh, my God, there's a camera. Let's act a fucking fool. They were already fighting. They were already drinking. And they were both already acting up. Ray Rice made a horrible mistake. This is my personal opinion. Ray Rice fucked himself. Excuse the language, but he fucked himself. Why? Because when you knock your wife out on an elevator or your girlfriend out on the elevator, you don't drag her out of the elevator and throw her on the floor for everybody to see. What you should have done was pick her up. You are an NFL football player. You gonna tell me you can't pick up a 130-pound woman? You should have picked her up, carried her to the room. Anybody that saw you in the hallway, you tell her she dropped, passed out. You take her in the room. You lay her down on the bed. When she wakes up, she going to be mad as hell, yelling and screaming, this, that, the other. But you talk to her and you make her understand, okay, you mad. So let's work it out between us. Because ain't that what they did? They ended up working it out between them, but they had that little time in that hallway where other people already knew. And working it out between them didn't matter no more once other people knew. Whereas had he just picked her up, taken her in the room, had that fight in the room, argument, whatever, and they worked it out, Ray Rice would be playing football this coming Sunday. But no, his dumb ass, instead of picking her up, drags her out of the elevator and dumps her on the floor. And that is why he is in the shit he's in right now. Because the one thing about the niggas on a plantation, they make sure you stay ignorant enough to where you don't know the right thing to do. So that you have to go to them to ask them what you should be doing. They keep you uneducated and they keep you submissive so that you always have to turn to the master to get direction. And when he was out there without the master, he didn't know what the fuck he was supposed to be doing, and he couldn't call somebody fast enough before other people showed up. And that is where Ray Rice failed. The bottom line is, if he were more educated and knew what the hell he was doing, he would have got himself out of that situation without dragging that girl out of that elevator and dumping her on the floor. That is a nigga, a dumb nigga for you. Instead of being a smart black man to say, I don't fuck up, I need to make sure I cover my ass before I go and fuck up even more. He went and fucked up even more.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time ever, I 100% agree with everything Tony Wiley has said. I think that it's, you know, it's, you know, and, you know, like I said, Tony, you know, you talked about it with Matt yesterday, you know, perception with these people is everything. You know, I mean, you know, and I had to look at the tape a couple of different times. Like I said, I even got into disagreement with my mom over it, you know, because, like I say, you know, I'm a man. And, you know, so sometimes, we view things differently. Like I said, what I saw, and, you know, I said yesterday with Matt, I saw the beginning of the tape. I saw him standing there by himself. That set off a red flag in my mind. It's like, then I saw her stroll up. I saw her interact with him. She either pushed him or slapped him when she first walked up by him. This is outside the elevator. I could tell by the way she was walking. I'm like, okay, this chick is drunk. If you notice, she grabs the elevator door when the elevator opens up like she might have been about to stumble in there.
Then when they get on the elevator, he tries to stand next to her. He says something to her, or he does something, or pushed her, and she pushed him back. He backs up. She comes towards him, and he cold cocks her. Then, you know, he tries to drag her out. And like I said, I think if the dragging, if he did not drag that woman out of there, like I said, because the hotel people, the staff, they said, the first thing they said is no police, right? So they know, like I said, this is a hotel. You got to understand, this is an NFL player, so he's not staying in the Holiday Inn. This is a high-class hotel where I can guarantee you worse shit has happened in that hotel that they didn't tell on. You know, yeah. And Ray Rice is known to us, but Ray Rice, he's the fourth shortest player in the NFL. I wouldn't know Ray Rice right now if he was walking down the street, tell you the truth. You know, so they don't, you know, so like I said, so, you know, odds are if he, like Tony said, if he would just pick her up and just went on about his business, like I said, once I did that, I'm going back upstairs. I'm not, you know what I mean? We're not going to no floor where there's even people at, you know? We're still in the elevator. I'm pressing the emergency button. I might even call my lawyer. You know, it's going down on this elevator is now in crisis control, you know? But, you know, like I say, he handled the situation completely, you know, ridiculously. And, you know, and now, like I say, he's getting the business. This is kind of what they started talking about in the 90s with Clarence Thomas, even though, people consider him a coon. I really don't know that much about Clarence Thomas to consider him a coon. But, you know, when he started talking about high-tech lynching, you know, and this is what's going on right now. You know, if you look at Jamal has posted some stats up on the CMT page, 85% hike in domestic violence calls since that damn video came out, 85%. So now you're going to get he's going to take the brunt of everything that everybody's feeling right now. You know, this is a guy, like, he's never had any issues. He's been a low-key kind of guy, but now he's about to get the brunt of all of it. You know, and that's what happens in today's society when a black man makes any kind of mistake.
Another thing that is not being mentioned. On the plantation, the massa always takes a black man to be the overseer of the slaves. With all due respect, the GM of the Baltimore Ravens, who is the massa's nigga, the overseer of the massa's plantation, came out and said, Ray Rice did not lie to me. Everything you see on that tape, Ray Rice told me. He did not lie to me. So, to me, that is the end of your argument, Mr. Goodell. That is the end of your argument, Mr. Ravens owner. That is the end of your argument, football coach. Why? Because the man did not lie about what happened. He told the general manager, who is the massa's nigga, exactly what he did. He told him that he knocked her out on that elevator. He told him that. He told him that he drug her out of that elevator and threw her on the floor. He told him that. You didn't have to see it. He told the truth. So that because he told the truth, when the Ravens went to Goodell and told Goodell what happened, Goodell knew exactly what the fuck happened. He knew he knocked that girl out. He knew he drug that girl out of that elevator, and he knew he threw that girl on that damn floor. He didn't have to see it. He knew it because the GM said he told him exactly what happened, and the organization told the NFL exactly what Ray Rice told them. So they didn't need a video. They knew exactly what Ray Rice did. And they suspended him for 2 games after he told them the... So whether you've seen the video or not, The man told the truth. He told you exactly what happened. So you can't see the video and then act like you're fucking shocked and then take the man's job.
Well, the thing is, what people have to realize is, Goodell in the NFL, they don't care about that woman, first of all. I hope everybody realizes that. They do not care about that woman, and they don't care about Demetrius Mullins. What they care about is the fact that the Ravens are a year out of the Super Bowl, so they're still a money-making franchise, and they wanted to get, like Tony said, they wanted to get that nigga back on the field. You know, that's what their main concern was. You know, now you got the National Organization of Women calling for inquest in the domestic violence situation in NFL players, and for you sisters out there who want to be feminists, they weren't doing this when that police officer beat the crap out of that black woman in the middle of the road in Southern California. There was no National Organization of Women saying anything about this. So that lets you know
anybody,
how much they really care.
Anybody that knows how things happen, Mike, anybody that knows how things happen knows that they saw that tape. And the reason why I say that is because handed him a 2-game suspension, and then a month later, they had created an entire new law that says if you get caught doing domestic violence, it is an automatic 6-game suspension, and the next time you are kicked out of the NFL. You are not going to go do some crazy shit like a 6-game suspension and kick people out if you didn't see that video.
Exactly. And, you know,
you are
like
not going to go and get that extreme unless you've seen that video. But you had already handed down his punishment, and there wasn't anything else you could do about that because collective bargaining with the Players Association says you can only be punished once for the same incident. And they had already punished him with the 2-game suspension. And that is why they came up with this 6-game suspension and the other thing, because they saw that video. You don't come out and do that just to fucking do it. They're lying. They saw that video.
Yeah, most of them. Yeah, the video. Like, this was about them getting caught. Now, do you guys think Goodell needs to be fired?
I was about to talk about that. There's been talk about, like, some people were saying, like, man, that man should resign. Gonna
what
hide
do you think?
That,
you
know,
what do you
all
think,
know, we all know it's about the money
thing,
but
I mean, is it going to really make a difference if he's fired or not? Like what you said, they'll just put another mask on there anyway.
I just think he dropped the bomb even before the tape and all this came out with 2 games. I'm like, man, should have got more than 2 games, man.
The thing that you guys are seeming to miss is this whole analogy I just gave you about the plantation. The plantation owners don't see it like we see it. We are looking at it from the plant, the field, up to the big man's house. The big man is upstairs looking out his window, looking down on the field. They have a different perception of this whole thing to you. And you got to realize, Goodell is just their representative to the town. That's all Goodell is. He can be replaced. But the thing is, even when you replace him, it's got to look good on them. It ain't got to look good on the player. Ray Rice ain't got to come out of this looking good. Who's got to come out of this looking good? The Baltimore Ravens. That's who's got to come out of this looking good. Who else has to come out of this looking good? The NFL. The NFL and the Baltimore Ravens got to come out of this looking good no matter what happens to Ray Rice. That's the rule.
Yeah, it seems like it. You know, and first of all, I just want to invite anybody else who want to call in 347-237-5539. We're about to enter in to overtime, so unless you're called in, you will get cut off in about 4 minutes. Our overtime is going to last about an hour. That's where we get even more in-depth and outrageous as we even get right now. So please feel free to join in on that. Let me go back to David and James.
What do you guys think about the way Goodell handled this situation, and what do you think this means for his future?
Yo, I mean, look, I've always not liked Roger Goodell being the, you know, commissioner of the league. Really to how he, you know, kind of reacts to suspending players for basically minor stuff, and then, you know, puts the hammer down on things that, or at least, you know, tries to do something minor as far as, like, a suspension or something like this, and then turn around and try to clean it up. So, I mean, his actions have pretty much been questionable ever since he's the commissioner of the National Football League. But it's like Comey said, all a commissioner is the overall representative of the owners of the National Football League. The owners choose who the commissioner is. It's not, you know, someone wants to be the commissioner and they end up, you know, being the president and then they control what the owners do. No, the owners control the commissioner. So even if he was out, they would just choose somebody else to take his place to pretty much do the same thing that they've been doing since the NFL was created. So it's double S, double D as far as I'm concerned.
I was going to say, too, also, you know, Roger comes from a rich family, so, you know, his dad was in politics or something, I think a congressman or something like that, but I know his dad was in a politician, so, you know, hey, he's all up to his MO, all about money. The way he's doing with the league, transitioning to it, all about the money, you know, with the NFL Europe. So I've just been, ever since he really been the commissioner, I ain't really been an advocate of him. I just don't see, I don't like what he's, the direction he's taking the NFL to, because honestly, I still say NFL is America's sport. He's trying to globalize it. He's trying to make you think it's going to be like the NBA and, you know, Major League Baseball being international and all that. I'm like, no, this is America's sport. And that's what the thing, you know, trying to have, you know, a Europe, you know, NFL where, you know, teams like that. That's, man, that's not going to work, man. That's one of the things I don't like, but it's definitely going to be people saying that, you know, I heard a caller today saying, man, Roger Goodell's by the end of the week, should lose his job over this situation.
And it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but the thing about it is that, and what you said, Mike, is, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to you, but if you people have this impression that Goodell is doing this and Goodell is doing that, he's doing what the people above him are telling him to do. His job is to be a buffer. So his job is the buffer between the owners and the public. So if the public, if there's enough of a public demand for Goodell to get fired, they'll fire him, they'll put it on the person's position, the ball keep rolling. You're talking about a multi-billion-dollar organization. So what a lot of people are not understanding and what Tony is trying to get a lot of people to understand is that Goodell is in position, so you put your attention on Goodell and not on the owners. That's why he's there. So he's not, if the league is going in a particular direction, it's not because of Goodell. It's because the ownership has told him, we want you to execute this particular plan. And he
exactly.
gets paid to stand in front of everybody and say, this is the direction we're going on. He gets paid to say, I'm going to issue this particular type of penalty because this player took this action. That's why he makes his salary. So he's an employee of the NFL. He doesn't own anything. When he loses his job, he takes no ownership with him. He's an employee of the NFL. So the owners understand that the way we're going to manipulate the public is to get them to put their attention on this guy we call the commissioner while they sit in the back. And they really call the shots because that's how the game is played. You know what I'm saying? A lot of us can be conditioned to think the person on that we see is a person in power. That's not a person in power. The person you don't see is a motherfucking power. So that's what they're doing. So if the public says we want Goodell to get fired, they'll fire him because they're not going to let Goodell stand in the way of their business model. They put another guy in position, and they keep doing what they was doing. So Ray Rice's original penalty didn't come from Goodell. It came from what they felt was the best thing for their organization. And then when it got out of hand, they said, okay, let's do something different to try to make the public feel good. And then if they still want some more blood, we'll throw Goodell into the shark tank. And then everybody said, okay, yeah, we got what we wanted. But nothing has changed the way they run the organization because, you know, niggas on the street ain't going to change the NFL. They ain't going to change shit.
Absolutely.
It's too much football.
You know, like David said, this is a multi-billion dollar, you know, organization here. So this, you know, let's say we're all billionaires.
are we really going to put somebody who we're not in charge of in charge of our billion-dollar organization, or are we going to put a puppet there, you know, who can, you know, who if we do something too fucked up, we can make him fall on his sword and take the blame for everything, you know? And that's what it really is. I mean, Goodell, you know, he's gonna take the brunt of it. He's probably gonna get fired, but you know, like Clausell said earlier, you know, they're probably just gonna put, you know, well, they are just gonna put another puppet dude, you know, in his place if he does, you know, if something does happen to him. So it's, you know, it's a money game, man, and it's, you know, like I said, they don't care about domestic violence. They don't care about that girl. They really don't shit. They really don't care about Ray Rice besides his legs, and you know, and they're not gonna let that mess with their money too much. You know, if this, like I said, exactly. If this could have got swept up under the rug, like I'm sure the thousands of other situations are that happen in Major League Sports, I'm pretty sure it would, you know. That's the other thing. You know, folks, you know, America, you know, let's not get in our minds, you know, that this is the first domestic violence case or this is the last. You know, like I say, much worse things happen in sports. Like, you know, like I put it on Facebook, you know, we had a motherfucker kill somebody 2 weeks ago. And that's not even a story anymore than Tony Stewart. And I don't care what anybody says, he killed that dude.
That's basically an afterthought right now.
Man, it's not even how you, like I say, it's not even an afterthought. You have to Google that shit. You know, when you have to Google something and look it up, you know, it's like, oh, shit, you killed. You know, it's 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
damn,
I'm not really,
you know.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not getting why this is such a, yeah, because, like, this stuff happens all – I'm not saying it happens all the time, but, I mean, this ain't the first time something like this happened. Let's just put it that way. And
well,
like
it's two things, Clauso. Like Tony said, it's because of the taste, and it's because of the way he – like I say, if he would have picked that girl up or just, you know, like I said, not tried to drag her out of there like that and then dropped her down, and, you know, that would have had a lot to do with it. And plus, you know, like I said, there is – you know, it's always going to be a racial factor. It's too much in the air right now, to where if anybody does anything out of line, it's going to get blown up, you know, no matter what. And also, you know, I want to add this, too. I didn't appreciate you guys, boy, Obama coming out and saying what he had to say either. But we are in overtime.
What did Obama
right
say?
Now.
What did Obama say?
Some shit about Ray Rice not being a man. I didn't even watch it. You know, like I said, he did what he does every time. And, like, you know, like what I tell people he done before. But, you know, when I say that, I'm a coon. So, you know, he's done what he does. He went out there
It goes back to the Supreme Court justice back in 18 something that said there is no law, there is no rule, and there is no situation in America where a white man has to give a black man any respect whatsoever. They truly, white men believe that. There is no law. I know civil rights, Emancipation Proclamation, they don't give a fuck. None of that makes them have to give you any respect that they don't want to give you. Now, they might give you some because you've done something for them, but the thing is, when they decide they want to take it from you, there is nothing you can do to stop it because this is their country, and that's how they see it. I'm tired of everybody pretending that this is not the real America. Everybody wants to keep the real America up under some kind of cover and keep this fantasy going. Real America is white supremacy. That is real America. And until we address it, until we face it, and until we solve it, it is not going to change. Because that white man is teaching his white son to keep doing what he's doing, what his daddy did, what his granddaddy did, what his great-granddaddy did, and what his great-granddaddy's great-granddaddy did. And that's be better than anybody else in this fucking country. And until we address that and say we are not going to allow supremacy to exist in this country anymore, it's just going to keep going because that's what the owners are doing. Just like Dave said, and just like I've been saying, they put these fucking puppets out there, and you think those people are the ones doing something. Those people are fucking puppets. They're nobody. The real power and the real decision are these white men thinking they're supreme over everybody else, and they're having this puppet out here to pretend like he's the good guy. He's not the fucking good guy. He's a man getting paid to say what he says. The time has come for us to stop pretending like everything is okay and racism is dead and we need to just keep pretending like it's not there and keep it under the covers and keep it under the bed. Fuck that. The time has come for black men to say, I'm not going to be your goddamn slave no more. And I don't care what that means. If that means I have to die, then damn it, you better have to kill me because I'm not going to be your slave no more. If that means I don't have my job, then I don't have my job. If that means Antonio Watley is never a politician, then fuck politics, because I'm not going to be nobody, nigga.
Well, when it's time for them to lose their job, that's when you're going to lose them, Tony, because them niggas ain't going to leave their job.
It's crazy.
Say that again, David.
I said, when you say it's time for them to leave their job, that's when you're going to lose all these Negroes, because they're not going to leave their job. They're going to talk all that shit, but they're not going to leave their job. They want to
Hey, y'all remember, and I'm going to get you sucker when he went to the African Revolutionary place and he told them how the brothers went into the building with guns and came out with job applications. You know, that's all you got to do. Get a nigga to shut up. You throw some money in this face and he'll shut up real quick. You know?
Yeah.
But,
that's
I don't know, man.
Tony was saying, with strong will, hey, he said he ain't going to take it. I'm not nobody's slave and anybody going to control me. I'm gonna control my destiny and me.
I understand
what Tony was saying. What I'm saying with the masses of people, they're not gonna leave that plantation because they have not been conditioned to think they can do nothing for themselves without that plantation. So they gonna
right.
They're gonna say, you know, we got white, you know, white supremacy, blah blah blah. But when it comes time to leave the plantation, that's when you're gonna lose 95% of them.
Absolutely.
They don't know what else to do. Folks got to understand.
Even in actual slavery, when there was a slave revolt and they took over the plantation, they didn't fucking leave. They stayed there until the white people created a militia to come put down the revolt. You know, anybody in their right mind, once you kill all your slaves, get the, you know, it always used to bother me. It's like, damn, why didn't Nate Turner and all the niggas just, you know, get the fuck out of there, you know? Why wait around there? You know, it's like, you know, but we got a mentality where we don't, it's like when they put all the niggas in Chicago, get the hell out of there, you know? Learn how to lead. You know, we don't know how to lead, you know, our surroundings. I don't know if it's when we get too comfortable or, you know, we don't know how to do shit on our own, but, you know, niggas don't know where to lead.
I feel you, Tony, but
you're talking to a small audience. I feel you, Tony, though. I feel you.
Oh, yeah. I understand Tony's frustration. I told somebody the other day, and I heard it the other day, and I'm really starting to believe it. I didn't want to believe it, but as black men, in general, we really don't have any allies. You know, not to say that there aren't, black women who are our allies, but in general, I don't think we have any allies.
I am a college professor. I get threatened every day on Facebook and other places telling me I'm gonna contact your school and tell them you shouldn't be teaching kids. I'm on this show and people can swear up and down they're gonna take it to my school. My word to you, fuck you and that school. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to tell the truth. I don't give a fuck what that school says. And if they fire me for speaking my mouth and speaking my mind in the constitutional right of freedom of speech, I'm going to sue the fuck out of them.
Yeah.
So they can do what they feel like they can do, but they're going to be ready for this nigga.
You know what, Wiley, not to change the subject, I want to get right back on this, but see, you know what, that's the mindset that Jameis Winston's entering the league with. The mindset
Can we get back to this right now? I just want to say that. Cam Newton's on the plantation.
That's all I got to say.
If he had that mindset, he wouldn't be trying to get a job.
Exactly.
Who are you talking about?
If he had the mindset, he wouldn't be trying to get a job in the NFL. He'd be like, fuck them. I'm finna go do me.
He's not even trying to get a job. He's trying to get on the plantation right now. So you got to be kidding me with that bullshit.
He wouldn't even be trying to get into the NFL. But they're going to control you, tell you how much you can weigh, tell you where you could be, put you on a curfew. You a grown man. Somebody's going to tell you when you got to come to your house at night.
Hey, check it. Check this.
He breaking his neck to get on that plantation.
Once James
that was
Winston
a true stunt.
It's a wrap.
What'd you say, James?
Like I said, I'm not trying to lose my job, but I'm also not trying to lose me. I'm going to be me. And that's my big deal. You know, I have earned everything I've got in my life. I got 5 college degrees to be able to be a college professor. They didn't give that to me. I earned that. And when I came for that job, you didn't hire me because I was a black man. You hired me because I have the academic and the professional experience to do the job. And my freedom of speech is mine. I can say what, as long as I haven't threatened anybody, I can say whatever I want. Everybody else is allowed to say whatever the hell they want. So I get to say whatever I want. As long as I'm not defaming your school, I can say whatever I want. You don't tell me how to be me.
We've had elementary school teachers who've been recorded, you know, saying horrible things about Obama and threatening, you know, and this and that, you know, and then nobody fired them. Remember they caught that one teacher, I forget where he was, somewhere down there. They caught him going in a whole diatribe about Obama and warmonger and how many people he's killed and, you know, and this and that. Now back in the day he'd be in this type of situation, you know. The different viewpoints is what's so bothering about this. It's like, you know, on your page, Tony, you know, when you were talking about the video and a couple of girls, I'm assuming, I don't know if they were your friends or just, you know, colleagues or whatever, you know, they came out and they viewed the video completely differently from the way, you know, from the way me and you viewed it. You know, I couldn't even believe, you know, they viewed it like that. I'm sitting, you know, that's why I just said, I can't believe that she, you know, I don't know, saw my comment I put out, like, I can't believe that she put that, you know. It's almost like it's two different worlds, you know. It's just amazing that, you know, damn near 500 years later, we're still in the same shit, you know.
Yeah.
But you know,
right,
I mean, it's really disturbing. You know, it's sad. You know, we really don't have that many, you know, that many allies. I think that, you know, I was talking to this these black girls earlier today in one of the groups I'm in, and, you know, I told them, I said, situations like this is where the supremacy really comes out and tries to use our women as a tool against us, you know, because now you got all these black women, you know, speaking out about, you know, black men are abusive, this and that. I don't know how many groups I tell you I've been in today where I've seen a girl post, you know, some shit about black, you know, a black man being, I'm like, are you serious? It's like, so one NFL player, hits his girlfriend in a 5-second period, and all of a sudden we're all, you know, all these big domestic violence animals, and, you know, and women.
What was real, like I said, what was really disturbing to me about the whole thing, Mike, was right after I put up the video of Ray Rice, I put up the video of Tim McGraw 2 weeks ago, slapping the shit out of this woman on camera in one of his concerts because she grabbed his penis.
Yes.
And I said, wait a minute.
On the PhD.
That chick
on your page, it was a chick on Tony's
page. Wait a minute. Let me finish telling the story. I put this up, and I say, wait a minute. Right now, we have two public figures, two stars in America. One's a white man, one's a black man. You have them on videotape, both hitting a woman. You have them both on videotape hitting a woman. It is national outrage that this black man hit this woman. And for the white man who hit that woman, they turned their head and kept on walking like it never even happened. How is it that he can slap that woman in front of a million other people and you can say, well, he was justified? But Ray Rice was getting hit by his wife, spit on by his wife, and all, or his girlfriend at the time, and all kinds of things that you didn't get to see before you saw that video, and then he hits her, but he wasn't justified. So it's all about justification now, or is it really about men abusing women? Because all of a sudden that white man abused that woman, and you didn't have a problem with it. But what happened when Chris Brown hit Rihanna? Oh, it was the end of the world. That nigga needs to be in jail. They had it on television every single fucking day for 30 months. They wouldn't let it go. When Chris Brown hit Rihanna, oh, it was major news. But when Tim McGraw slapped the shit out of one of his fans, let's just forget that ever even happened.
One of the girls
on Tony's page,
it was a white girl, said that maybe he was trying to slap five with one of the fans and missed and accidentally slapped the girl in her face.
You can see the girl's whole neck snap back.
From standing up, and this dude, he was standing on stage. He was about what? A good 5 feet below him. He had to reach down.
Yeah.
Reach down and cut her. Where her neck,
I mean, you see the girl's whole head snap back.
And then after that, his security came and hemmed her up. Did you see that at the end too, when the security came and grabbed her ass and hemmed her up?
Yeah, and made her leave.
Yep.
He said,
and everybody jokes and laughs about that, but they don't realize, what's the difference? Is this not two men hitting women? Ain't that the abuse? And I even asked them, Mike, I asked them, so what's the difference? And they actually got on there and said, well, one is domestic violence and the other one is just assault.
Just assault?
What the fuck do you mean just assault? What the fuck is just assault?
I didn't even want to respond to them, Tony. I saw that. I didn't even want to respond to it. I was just reading it. I was just like, okay. I thought they were joking. I thought, you know, when they typed that, I thought they were joking, seriously. I was like, please let these broadcasts go.
I said, I asked them, so are you telling me domestic violence is not assault? Then what the fuck is it if it's not assault? Domestic violence is someone hitting someone in someone's house. Someone that is a member of your family. Assault is someone hitting someone that's not a member of your family. But it's the exact same thing. But you're going to tell me domestic violence is worse than assault? And she said, yes.
What?
Tony, if you get a chance, post a link to all that on the CMT page so everybody can check that out, please.
She said, yes, domestic violence is worse than assault.
Oh, man.
And this is the way,
and
folks have to realize, this is the way that mainstream America views these type of incidents.
And what's the commonality with all these athletes?
Since I didn't see the video, Tony, was he provoked to hit her like that? What happened? How did it transpire? I never heard about this.
It was a T stage.
You know what a T stage is? A T stage is that stage where it's the main stage, but then you've got that little ramp that you can walk out on into the crowd, right? He was walking on the little ramp out into the crowd where the crowd could be touching him, right? Well, while he's out there singing and walking out in the crowd where the people are able to touch him and stuff, one of them girls grabbed his dick. That's what happened. Instead of just touching him, she went and grabbed his dick. When she grabbed his dick, he turned around and hit that bitch. You could see her neck snap back. Her hair, everything jerked back. The next thing you know, security came and grabbed her and took her out. But you seen him turn around and hit her. You seen him turn around and hit her. But everybody said, well, that's okay.
It wasn't a reaction to where he just flicked her off or hit her hand. He stopped, turned around, knelt down, and hit her.
Damn.
A deliberate action, yeah. But Tony, put that on the CMT page, too, if you get a chance, please. I have it, if you guys want to see it, I also put it on my page, too, if you guys want to check on my personal page, you guys want to check it out. We need to link that on the CMT page, too. But, you know, like I said, this type of shit happens, and, you know, that's, like I say, that's the way the public views it, and that's the way they view us. Like I say, so we don't have any allies out there, man. You know?
It's their life, it's their rules, it's their plantation. And on their plantation, we don't have any rights. We're like cows. We don't have any rights. And that's how they treat us, like cows. We're their property for their use. We don't have any rights that they have to respect. They said it themselves. We have no rights that they have to respect. It's in the Dred Scott decision. If you look it up, you will find it. The Chief Justice of the United States of America, the Chief Justice of the United States of America is the top person in the judicial branch of the United States of America. The President is the top of the executive branch. The Speaker of the House is the top of the legislative branch, and the Chief Justice is the top of the judicial branch. The judicial branch is the branch that guarantees that all laws in America are constitutional, and they're the ones who decide what laws are law in America. And this is the person speaking for every human being in America, and he said there is no law in this country that makes a white man have to respect anything of a black man. This is the head person of the laws in America at that time saying there's not a law in this country that a white man has to respect that has anything to do with a black man. That is powerful. People better understand what that means. That wasn't just one man's opinion. He stands for every human being in America. And when he says there's no law a white man has to obey that has anything to do with a black man, every black man in America says, fuck niggas. I just had the main this guy tell me I ain't got to respect no law that a black man gets. So what does he teach his children? He teaches his children, you ain't got to respect no law that a black man has. And what does he teach his children? You ain't got to respect no law that a black man has. And what does he teach his children? You ain't got to respect no law that a black man has, no matter how many they pass. And it's passed down from generation to generation. And that's why they still treat us like they treat us today, because they truly believe there is no law they have to respect as a white man that has anything to do or profit for a black man. They truly believe it. Inside their hearts, they believe it.
See how they doing President Obama these past years on it? You see how, you know, they don't even call him president to say Obama and all this stuff he had to go through. So you see it right there. You know, it was history in the making, but still, hey, we all know, man.
Think about it. The President Barack Obama's very first address to the nation, in the history of the addresses to the nation, you know the one thing you do while the president's standing up there is you just keep your mouth shut and you clap or you don't clap and you sit there. President Obama is sitting there talking and the white man just screams out, a congressman screams out, you lie in Congress while he's giving the State of the Union. Are you kidding me? Had that been a black man, any white president before him, he'd have got thrown out of Congress.
Oh, my God. Whatever even happened to that? Dude, man.
That was like the most surreal situation ever.
In the middle of the State of the Union speech, he screams out, "You lie! You can't do that to the President of the United States!"
And if folks don't forget, people rallied around that dude, too. It wasn't like he was an outcast. People rallied around him or, like, supported
people
the hell out of him.
Hero! White people loved him!
I know this kind of back to this topic again, but I got some breaking news. They said Roger Goodell just announced that he's going to hire former FBI Director Robert Mueller III to conduct an independent investigation into NFL's pursuit and handling of evidence in the Ray Rice situation.
That's bullshit. The policeman has the audio tape of the woman from the NFL executive office calling him back saying, "Thank you for the video. We received it. We will make sure that the appropriate people get it." He's got the fucking audio on tape. How are you going to deny that?
Guess he's trying to say
an investigation? You don't need no investigation. It's right there. She called him and said they got it. If they got it, are you going to tell me the secretary took that and threw it away? You don't. Come on, man. Really?
Also, Tony, is conducted by two owners of the NFL, Clyzel, your Giants, Mara, and Rooney. So the Steelers. So, Tony, yeah. So your Steelers and Giants involved in this situation, too.
That's just crazy. They're trying to cover their own ass right now, and that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
but
it's
too late to cover their ass now. Because
and they say the final report will be made public, too.
This is all damage control right now. They're in damage control mode right now.
What happened was everybody was in agreement, and everybody was on the same page until the cop came out and said, "Wait a minute, that's a damn lie. All of them are swearing they didn't see that video. They didn't see that video because I'm the one that sent it to them." Had that cop not come out, everybody had already circled the wagon and got their story straight. You going to tell me that the NFL and the Baltimore Ravens seen that tape on the same day that TMZ released it? So you're going to tell me that TMZ had it before the Baltimore Ravens had it? You're going to tell me that TMZ had it before the NFL had it? That's bullshit, and you know it.
Gospel truth. That's the truth. And like folks said, this is a billion-dollar industry. So if y'all don't think that they had access to that tape before TMZ or website did, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to face facts about the way things go.
Because like I said, for something like that, to make a decision like that, you have to see all the evidence, right? You just can't jump to conclusion without seeing all the evidence. So they have to have seen that. If the casino seen the tape, when the police seen the whole tape, NFL definitely would have to see that tape as well. Because they have to ask for it, you know, before they make that decision of suspending the guy.
Well, this
and everybody's
the
talking about this. America seems to forget that we have rules to privacy in this country. Everybody talking about, well, this video is public record. No, the fuck it ain't. This video was taken in a casino. They have their own private records, and they did not have to release it to anyone. They didn't have to release it to TMZ. They didn't have to release it to the NFL. They didn't have to release it to nobody but the police. That's the only people they had to release it to in an investigation. They had to release it to the police, and that's who they released it to. The police said that they gave it to the NFL. And if you're going to tell me that they didn't do that or the NFL didn't see it, the NFL is lying. And if the NFL swears they're not going to fess up to it, then you believe what you want. But America wants to say this is public property. This is not public property. That was a casino and a hotel. They are a private business, and it was their private tape. They did not have to release it to TMZ. They did not have to release it to the NFL, and they did not have to release it to the Baltimore Ravens. They had to release it to the police because of the investigation. But the bottom line is, no, you did not have the right to see that public. You did not have the right to see that. That was a private video. That's just like a private video that I make in my home. Public, you do not have the right to see it. Why? It is my private property, and I don't have to show it to you. You do not have the right to my private property. And that hotel, it was their private property. So, no, you did not have the right to see Ray Rice hit his girlfriend.
That's a good point. And, you know, and that also extends to anybody that ever sees a sex tape of anybody and that person says that they didn't want that sex tape released, they're lying. You cannot release
exactly.
anything
so
like
somebody
that.
Somebody has to do it.
Exactly. You can't release that. Like you said, if you're outside, yes, they can take you. If you're inside, that's right to privacy.
Exactly. And that hotel, like you said earlier, Mike, I guarantee you Ray Rice ain't the first person to come in that old hotel and act a fool.
Exactly. Yeah, no, dude. The people understand. The richer people get, the more extravagant they're taking. You got dudes that pee and crap on women. You know what I mean? Like I said, nobody knows what goes on behind anybody's closed doors. It just so happened this got caught on tape, and you know, and like I said, somehow I don't know if the police were already in that lobby or how they got down there, but you know, that's what happened. So like they said,
had he picked that girl up and taken her to his room, you'd have never heard about this.
Exactly. Even the hotel people, the clerks themselves said, you don't want the police involved in this, right?
Exactly, because it's private property. They could have simply just erased that tape and it never happened. But his dumbass went and pulled her out there in public, drug her out there and down on that floor so that just your everyday people could see it, your everyday people could turn on their cell phones and videotape it, all kinds of things, and then it's out in the public. Whereas had he just picked her up, carried her to the room, he could have said she was drunk. She wouldn't have said nothing because she was passed out.
Yeah, that dragon part. I saw that tape when it finally came out about the dragon part, looking like, what? It's like, no, there's no way it's two games for that. There's no way. Then you see the punch, you're like, you know, they blew this one, man. They blew it.
Ray blew it, yes. Ray Rice blew it.
He blew it and the NFL blew it on the suspension with the two games. They got an answer to that, man. And the Ravens got they still someone in it, too. Because they said, I read when it came out, they released Ray Rice because he wasn't straight, honest, or fair about the whole situation. So if Ozzie Newsom said that Ray told him everything, then why one source in the organization saying that he didn't tell everything, it wasn't straightforward on it?
Hey, Mike, can we talk about one last thing that ain't a sport?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, the new Ferguson information has come out. What's happened is there were five people that had video and eyewitnesses to what happened, but they were all black. And because they were all black, everybody was giving them no credibility. Everybody was saying, oh, well, they're just being on the black boy's side because that white killed them, and it's all about racism. So they gave them no credibility. But now we find out that there were two construction workers that were at the site at the time that saw the whole thing, and they were white men. And they got them on video and audio where the white man throws up his hands in the surrender play, in the surrender way, and he says, the man's got his hands up. What are you doing? While the guy is shooting at him. So,
wow.
Situation of where you got two white guys that went and testified that they saw the whole thing, they saw Brown run from them, they saw the man shoot him in the back, they saw Brown turn around and put his hands up, and the cop kept shooting. Now all of a sudden, it's breaking news on CNN that we got credible witnesses. Credible eyewitnesses. What the fuck do you mean credible eyewitnesses? You had credible eyewitnesses from the very fucking women. But now that two white men are saying it, they're more credible than the five people that already told you the same thing?
Wow.
Dang, it's same time they have breaking news on that, and then all the stories will be about the Ray Rice. That's going to be second to Ray Rice.
Yep. It is amazing how they had told them these stories from the first day it happened, but they weren't credible because they were black and the victim was black. But now all of a sudden two white men saw it too and say the exact same thing, so now all of a sudden it's breaking news. We got credible eyewitnesses. What the fuck does that mean, credible eyewitnesses? So the other five weren't credible?
And not only that, the officer has still not been arrested yet. No arrests have been made. No charges have been made.
And he's still being paid.
And he's and his defense fund. Even though he gets defended by the by his union, they're gonna pay for his lawyer and everything. His fund has raised over $400,000 for his defense.
Absolutely. And it ain't no raise, it's white people that have been donating to him, just like they did with George Zimmerman. White people donating to make sure that he gets off, even though he's guilty.
Yep.
Say I in the politics, our politicians get money, you know, people donating. For some of them, same thing with that. I didn't know his fund reached to $400,000. Wow.
Yep.
That's gonna be.
This is to the black people in America. You know why you keep being the slave on the fucking plantation? It's because you want to run your mouth and you want to protest, but you don't want to put up your money. The reason why white people keep dominating you is when they have a problem, they solve their problem with money, and you solve your problem with fucking size. If you want to solve a problem, you need to take your money and put it where your fucking mouth is.
Yep, not on some stupid-ass stuff, like you said, shining and stunting, putting on something for you.
Yo, the marching stuff is over, and we ain't getting nowhere by marching. You hear me?
Yep.
Exactly. Ain't nobody paying attention to your march. The second the white people see you out there marching, they change the channel. They don't give a fuck about your march.
And they gonna just get the FBI, the guard out there to shut it down. Like how
it
was that Brown thing,
well,
tear gas, all that type of crazy stuff.
Well, what people don't realize is because the reason marching started in the first place was because there wasn't widespread, you know, everybody didn't have a TV, you know, there wasn't the internet, so everybody didn't know, you know, so a march was a way to, you know, to raise awareness. Every time anything happens now, you got six different cameras recording and shit, so there's no more need for marching. It's an obsolete tool now.
Like I said, the bottom line, white America understands that if you want to get something done, you put some money behind it. That's why the Republican Party is the Republican Party, because it has been bought by billionaires. They control the key people in the Republican Party, so that it's a situation, well, in both parties. Honestly, both parties are controlled by the money. And, you know, people on the left have their billionaires, and people on the right have their billionaires. And what they do is they buy the key members of both sides, and when they vote something, they go to them and say, you got an election coming up in 2 years. And that's a code word to say, you better do what the hell I say or you don't get my money no more.
Yep.
Like you said, do this, boy, do that, or boy, you just get the hell out. We get another boy. To keep it clean, we all gonna say another word, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes. I asked the question after the Donald Sterling situation. I asked it after LeBron James situation. I'm going to ask you guys one more time. Is anything going to change in professional sports? Are the athletes finally going to wake up?
No. Come on. Are you kidding me?
Money's going to go up, but the athletes, the way it's looking, my friend, if it does change, it's not changing anytime soon. Maybe when we get old, you know what I'm saying, we really be in all in our late 60s, 70s or something like that during the time, and that could, if it's changed and stuff, maybe something like that, but I hate to say it, and, you know, we dominate basketball and football, we got our, you know, piece in and stuff like that, but I don't see it, man, not right now.
There's one way it will change, and that is a player-owned NBA, a player-owned NFL, and a player-owned professional sport. And until that happens, it won't change. And that ain't going to happen because they ain't going to let it.
Hey, it's much more than that, a lot more than that.
We could say the MJ, you know, he owned the Bobcats, the Hornets now, but I mean that's somewhat of a step. But you know, I didn't know he make his stance, or still he still got to pay Nike his money. I thought he had his own everything where he has making money himself instead of still giving Nike his cut of his Jordan brand. I didn't know about that. I was feeling like, damn.
Phil Knight told him to, Michael Jordan would shoot you in a heartbeat, Mike. That dude don't care about
that too.
Now, what were you saying, James?
No, I was saying that it takes a lot more than just having some type of players league or players organization that starts your own league. The NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball is not just entities. These are partnerships. These are companies dealing with other companies. If they don't partner with those other companies, you don't have a league, period.
Yeah.
Those are the people that work with the sponsorships. Those are the ones that work with the Raymond James, the Citibank, the Bank of America, the Kraft Foods, the Hershey's, the Nestle's, the Coca-Cola's, the Pepsi's, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And who do you think is running those companies? So if you're thinking about running the league like that, hey, you got to have people that look like you that actually run those type of organizations. And if you don't, you're done.
Yeah. Well, sponsors are the main thing, bringing in money and money to the networks. And, you know, no sponsors bringing in, generating millions. And like you said, the NFL lose even one sponsor, that's the millions they lose. So, I mean, especially if it's a big-time sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Tony, do you have any updates about your boy Ray McDonald's situation?
Well, I don't have any real updates on the public version of it, but I can say that I have learned a few things privately, and that I don't see it going anywhere in the NFL. And I don't see it going anywhere legally because was not a situation of actual domestic violence. It was more of a situation of an interaction within the house that got out of control. And while it was getting out of control, Ray was trying to control the situation, considering it was his wife, I mean his girlfriend, his fiance, his pregnant fiance, and it was in his house for his birthday. He was trying to control it. Someone else in the house made the phone call to authorities, and the police came out. In California, if the police are called and they have a visual evidence of abuse or scarring, you are automatically arrested. There is no ifs, ands, buts, ors, or maybes. So when they came because of the call, they came to her, they asked her what happened, and they asked her how she got the bruises. She told them that her boyfriend was trying to do, hold her, subdue her, whatever, and that's how it happened. They were there on a domestic call. She said it was her boyfriend who did it, so she had they had to arrest him.
That's why a couple of weeks ago I was asking you was she light skinned or not, because you know I wanted to, that's why I was trying to see if, you know, if any marks were, you know, show up easy on her just from grabbing her, because that is
and in the state of California, they have a very blunt rule. If you cannot see scarring, the domestic violence is a misdemeanor. If you can see domestic violence, scarring, the domestic violence is a felony. It is a blanket, flat, across the law rule. And what happened was they saw this bruising, so that when they booked him, they had to book him as a felony domestic violence case.
Yeah.
But as you see, obviously, now that the real issue or the all of the facts are in, obviously it's not going to be charged and it's not going to be a big deal, or you would not have seen Ray Rice on the football field Sunday.
Yeah, it seems like the Niners are in his corner in this one. I want to ask you a question. I know you can't release too much information, but this phone call that was made by somebody from that party, I want to know, was it a hair hat involved?
I can almost
guarantee the person behind that phone call to put that black man in jail was wearing a hair hat. I can almost guarantee it.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
So Callie Mike, you still say that you think the Niners still have his back on his corner for right now?
Oh yeah. Well yeah, I forget what the owner was saying, but pretty much they came out and they said that they're gonna let the wheels of, you know, whatever, you know, pretty they made
oh, yeah,
it pretty cool.
Yeah.
They said they're gonna let them take care of it. Yeah, I can't think of what exactly they said, but yeah, it seems like they're going to be in his favor in this. But Tony's right. They do have that rule in California. It's the same thing with the child abuse cases too. But yeah, like I said, I'm almost guaranteed that whoever made that phone call was a hater, and I'm almost as certain that they were wearing some sort of wig or hair hat. I know. If you lined up every woman at that party, I bet you I could point out who's the one who called the police. I bet you I could. But anyway, like I said, it's kind of sad. You know, it's folks. You know, like I said, I try to explain. You know, it's really hard to explain to a woman, especially if you try to explain to a black woman the differences of how it is to be a black man, to where you constantly have a target on you, and to where you're in a situation where, you know, you really don't know what might happen. You know, or damn near any. It's like I say, we all know as black men, you know, I'm pretty, you know, we're all from major cities, so I'm sure we've all seen some wild ass stuff that if you tell somebody about, they probably won't even believe you that this shit happened, you know, because, you know, when it's black men, you know, crazy shit happens, you know, and it's like I said, it's almost like we're not even in control of our lives half the damn time, because, you know, something could happen. We could be gone tomorrow. We could be in jail or dead, you know. All it'll take is for somebody to get pulled over, and maybe I move too quick, or maybe the officer, you know, anything could happen.
But it's really true, Mike. It's really true that in America, black people are not presumed innocent. This goes back to that whole there is no law that a white man has to respect over a black man. Black, because of the stereotype of black men being thugs and drug dealers and evil and mean and killing and beating, we are already presumed guilty from the start. I mean, the second, we don't even have to have done anything, they look at us and we're guilty. When you're walking up the road and they decide they need to move over because they see you coming, that's saying you're presumed guilty. You ain't even done nothing, but you're guilty because in their mind, you're going to do something. So that when you walk into a situation where the law gets involved, you're guilty. And you need to understand that is why when they say a jury of your peers, you have never seen a jury of 12 people that has more than 4 black people or minorities on it when it's a black person.
Yeah,
they never put a jury of that person's peers in it because automatically it's not something they're willing to admit, but we all understand it's a societal racism where black people are presumed guilty. So when you walk in there as a defendant, there is already somebody out of those 8 or 9 people that already think you're guilty. You got to prove to them you didn't do it instead of prove to them prosecution proving to them that you did.
Yeah, you don't have the presumption. I talked to one of the orderlies at my job. I was trying to explain to him about profiling and this and that. He was trying to tell me about sagging pants. You know, my pants don't sag. I don't like sagging pants. But that doesn't give me any reason to think somebody's a thug. Now, this dude, he's a white dude, bald head, both arms, full sleeve tattoos. I'm like, dude, I'm
skinhead looking.
Exactly. I told him, I said, how come nobody's shooting you? You know, I said, you look like you're a far worse, you know, you look like more of a criminal than me. I was like, you know, you don't hear, there's not a rash of people shooting skinhead looking dudes.
Exactly.
And he starts trying to explain something to me, and I told him, I said, basically, bro, I said, you're not going to understand it until it happens to you, you know.
I'll give you a prime example. Me and you, Mike, we love guns. We have guns. I put that picture of me with my gun on my Facebook, and I had my colleagues. I had some of my college professors. I had all kinds of people saying, that's not a very professional look. I don't think that says a lot about your professionalism. You're a person with 5 college degrees. I don't think that's how you want people to perceive you. Wait a minute. You ain't saying that when my partner puts a picture of him with his rifle out there. All of a sudden, he's an avid sportsman, and he's a gun fanatic. He loves his guns, and he's a sportsman, and he likes to go shooting. When it's him, he's a sportsman and he's an outdoorsman, but when it's me, it's something perceived as criminal and you don't want people to see you that way. Wait a minute, didn't we just do the exact same thing?
Exactly.
How is he a sportsman and an outdoorsman because he's on Facebook with a gun, but when I come on Facebook with a gun, I'm a gangster.
You know, people don't realize having dark skin, you know, it's not, you know, and you can't, and like I said, you can't explain it to even to explain it to any other race, like, you know, a Jew or a Mexican. Eventually, one of them might become light enough to where they can pass, you know, but it's like they can't, you know, our skin is going to identify us automatically no matter what, you know, so there's not going to be any blending in or hiding, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's just, you can't, like I said, it's not even something you can explain to people. It's like, you know, folks don't realize, like, that's why black people have high blood pressure. It's like shit, because we know when we go out, it's like Tupac. All eyes are on us, no matter where the fuck we are.
And we're always presumed guilty.
Always. I was out with my best friend, you know, he's one of my, the white dude. We were going out for Halloween. I'm wearing a fucking toga. We go into a liquor store. Why did this white girl accuse me of stealing her purse? You know, not him who has pockets and all this other shit, but me who's wearing a toga with no pockets and nowhere to put a purse. But, you know, and not only that, she said her friend saw me steal it. Not, oh, you know, and I am, like I said, because at first she said she couldn't find her purse. My dumb ass actually started looking around trying to see if I could help her find it because I felt bad. Then she goes, oh, my friend said he saw you take it. And it's like, really? And it's like, really? You know, and it's like, even my boy was there. He was like, wow. He was like, does that happen a lot? I was like, dude, I was like, it happens damn near every other day. You would
absolutely
be surprised.
Absolutely.
Said, you know, I told him, I said, this isn't true. I'm not the first person this ever happened to, and unfortunately, I won't be the last.
You know what's funny to me, Mike, is one of those situations for us. You know, you guys say I'm always identifying myself as a college professor and things like that. You know why? Because I have to. Because if I don't, I'm just a dumb nigga that don't know what he's talking about. I'm only talking because it's out of my feelings. I didn't go to school for fucking 10 years to learn it. I'm running my mouth and I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't blame you with that either. I never even thought of that before, Tony. I've had to do that shit too. I've had to show people pictures that I've been to Italy and all this other shit because they wouldn't believe me otherwise. You know?
You're lying.
You know, people have such expectations of black people. It's like, you know, I don't want to have to go anywhere where I have to prove anything to anybody. You know, I just want to, you know, I don't want to have to prove I'm a good guy. I don't want to have to prove, you know, this is America. We're supposed to be free. You know, we're not free to do shit.
Exactly. And, you know, it's amazing to me how I can be on Facebook or anywhere and they start talking about, well, you need to be more patriotic and you need to be this, you know, why didn't you serve your country? If you love your country so much, why didn't you serve your country? Bitch, I did serve my country. Not only did I serve my country, I am 100% permanently and totally disabled because of serving my country. So fuck you.
Yeah, it's like I say, people will never understand, you know, what that feels like, you know, and it's almost because you can't explain that to nobody. You know, I think after people, I'm telling you, you tell that to somebody, somebody will think you're making that shit up, Tony. You know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's like no, this actually happened. You know, even when they
I served my country during war. I lost my health for my country during war. I gave to my country. So don't come to me with that bullshit about your patriotism because you bought a goddamn gun. Fuck you and your gun.
Yeah, even when people actually see it happening, sometimes their minds are still so caught up in the system. They'll try to justify it or make it seem, you know, like them girls did on your video, on your post. You know, they'll try to make it seem different in their own minds to justify it. You know, even though
absolutely
right before them, it's black and white. You know, and that's actually scary. You know, when you come to think about it, that's actually scary. But anyway, look, we got 1 minute left. Let's get things wrapped up. And